Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, that's good to know. I just found out that I could sign into my Skype account at the same time as I was doing all kinds of cool stuff here, because we have a very special friend of mine who's going to be joining us in the 7 o'clock hour, assuming all goes well, assuming the Skype thing works, assuming I recognize it, can do all things I want to do. Alan Dawson, who's a friend of mine, he's a tour guide in Belize. And so he's one of the people I met while I had a great adventure working with Shelby on cruise ships on a couple of one-week wild stories. So that's how Shelby and I met. And I'll be happy to tell you that story sometime because it's really kind of cool. So I see it looks like we got Jean here. Let's get her on board and figure out what's going on. Jean, good morning. How are you today?
I've got some crackling on my phone. My internet is slow to move this morning. So I'm on my phone for a few minutes and hopefully my internet will come alive. Sometimes it's just the way it is.
I'm doing fine. The nice thing is only, you know, good Lord willing, only one of us has a problem at a time. So the other person, it's like when my show just got canceled by lightning, you were right there to take over until I could restart another episode. And that was great. So these things happen. Anyway, we've got Jean Adams here with the Nickel Freedom Report. I want to bring her on right now and get her started because we have a lot to cover today, including an experiment I'm going to try. I have my last recording of Matt Gaetz when I was back on WBY. And it doesn't mention WBY, it doesn't mention anything. I think it's going to cause a copyright violation. But I want to play it just to let you know where we were headed. We kind of got headed off a little bit, but also because I want to get him back on the show. And so I'm hoping to inspire him with what he used to do, which was call us. But that was before hair gel and fame and some other things like that. Anyway, I gotta poke fun at him because I do support him. You know, like I say, I'm not an objective journalist. I mean, far from it. I'm an advocate and I'm a citizen legislator. And so that's how we do these things. Anyway, let's go to Jane and figure out what is going on. Busy times you're having. Good morning, Jane. What's going on?
Morning.
Good morning. So I want to start off by highlighting the press conference from yesterday. I'm sure everyone is well aware, but if your listeners somehow missed it, I want to talk about that. So Governor DeSantis held a press conference specifically talking about vaccine mandates in the workplace and how he is working hard to put a stop to that. So he, one of his quotes from yesterday, he said, "We're here to announce that we need to take action to protect Florida jobs." And they're calling a legislative session to fight back against these employers that are terminating people due to the vaccine mandates. So I think that's an amazing step. And I want to read a little quote that kind of summarizes what he's working on.
Okay.
He said, "We provided probably the strongest COVID liability protection in the country very early on. To now see some of those businesses who were complaining about potential liability turn around and want to fire employees over these injections, I kind of feel like they're stabbing us in the back after we were standing up for them. And so we're going to be pursuing a number of protections for employees. First of all, if anyone has been forced to do an injection and has an adverse reaction, that business should be liable for any damages. I also think COVID like protection," and that's huge. He's saying that if employers, and this isn't listed on the quote that I'm reading, but I remember him saying that after that yesterday, he said, you know, if an employer is mandating you to take an injection and then you have an adverse reaction, they should be held liable for that because it wasn't your choice. You were doing it because your employer mandated it. And I think that is huge. You know, number one, because if people somehow are still going to go through with these mandates, then the employees will be protected for, you know, their medical bills. But then also that's going to
really
steer.
But they're still getting the vaccine, though. That's and I'm sorry to jump in here, but they're still getting the vaccine. This is the part that kills me. You can do all the corrective stuff afterwards that you want, but you're still in that position where you've permanently altered somebody's DNA. You've injected them with this messenger RNA crap, turning them into little COVID factories with spike proteins that break off and cause all numbers of problems, which you've enumerated, you know, very well here. But they really need to stop the mandates. They need to preemptively sue these companies or close them down or seize their assets or do something. If they institute a mandate, okay, great. If you propose a mandate by November 5th, you know, we're going to seize your company on November 1st. You know, if you don't stop this, I mean, there's some things that we could do. And I want to model it after two bills. One is our illegal alien zone bill, which uses asset forfeiture, and two, the bill that I wrote to put full product liability on vaccine manufacturers nationally. I think you and I should get together and start chatting about a state bill that is exactly what the government is trying to do. Let's give something to the legislature so they don't have to think. They're always better off when you give them something ahead of time rather than make them think. Because when they think, they get influenced by lobbyists and corporations and money and big pharma. I want to go directly. I want to have something, you know, in writing that they can take, that your groups and Cindy's group and all the other, we have two medical freedom reports on Action Radio, by the way. We're on the pulse. We're doing it, okay? And so this is about action. So if you have any interest at all in writing legislation, you know, in regarding that, we can do it on the air. We can do it, you know, afterwards and present it. I mean, there's many ways that we can do this, or you can write it yourself and put it on writeyourlaws.com. You know, so let's help out. Let's help our legislature do the right thing in a model that other states can also emulate. So that's kind of our specialty here. So if I can help you, just ask. That's what I'm here for.
I think that's perfect. And there's one other. Well. Touching on the liability, I really think that employees or employers are going to be very unlikely to follow through with the mandate if they know that they're going to be held liable. I think that's kind of the background goal, because if the big one that we've been talking about is Ascension. And if they now know that they have to pay for every single employee who has an adverse reaction in the state of Florida, mm-hmm. I would assume that, you know, they're going to be extremely uneasy about that. But there was one other thing that the governor said during the conference that I think is huge. He was talking about that all of these companies are not approving religious or medical exemptions. And he said that goes against laws such as SB 2006, which bans vaccine passports. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of tying it into that and saying, you know, on top of these mandates being wrong in the first place, now you're not even approving all of these exemptions, which is against state law. So I'm very proud that we have a governor that is recognizing this is not acceptable, and he's called a session to take care of it. In addition to that, I was extremely proud of Dr. Latipo and his speech that he had at the end of that press conference. And I've heard from some people that when they go back to try to watch the recording, that it's no longer on the recording on most news networks because it was cut off. Oh. Not surprisingly, I have seen some recordings of people that recorded it, you know, on their TV live. So thankfully there are recordings floating around, but Dr. Latipo got up and talked about adverse reactions from the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, watching it live. I was so proud and thankful, but I was honestly in shock that he was saying that on camera in front of all those people. He talked about that there's people being treated for adverse reactions from the vaccine at the NIH. And he just kind of, you know, did a reality check. He said, you know, these are happening, and while they may be rare, let's talk about it. Let's talk about how rare it is. Let's look at the data. Mm-hmm. And he said over and over that the efficacy and the safety is not well established, and it is
They're not
well
safe
known.
And effective. No, wait a minute. Every time I post something on Facebook, I get a little notice from Facebook. I get the little F, you know, and it says these vaccines have been tested and they're safe and effective, and they're monitored closely for what, I'm not sure exactly, but Facebook reminds me every time I make a vaccine post, which is rather frequent these days, they're right there saying, these are safe and effective. You're not going to tell me that they're not telling me the truth. I'm shocked.
Yeah.
That's what I am. Shocked. The big tech would lie to us and suppress.
That's
exactly
what he said. And that was amazing. That's another one I'm very thankful to have. And I know, you know, in today's climate, that takes courage in someone like his position. So I think that was great.
What is his position? I'm not familiar with him.
Oh, my gosh. You need to look at some of his interviews and what he's doing. He's the Surgeon General.
Of Florida?
He was just brought in.
I know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
I missed him. He's the new guy. What, they censored him because he's black? This is racist. Then we can accuse the news media of racism. they censored a black, you know, Surgeon General of Florida. Uh-oh. I love putting this back in their face. I mean, I just do. It cracks me up with things we could do. There's so much in this. Now, I've looked at the press conference. I don't think I looked it all the way through. I posted a video on my Facebook page. I posted it in a couple of different places. And I remember watching it, but I don't remember Dr. Ladipo. In fact, probably because I pronounced it Ladipo or something incorrect previously. He's cool. He's great. Now, I'll let you finish on the conference because I got a few things to ask you about that, and then I'll ask you about the rally too, the impact and the resulting actions from that. But let's stick with this press conference. Where was it, and what was the purpose? What was the governor? Why was he doing this?
It was in Clearwater, Florida, and the whole purpose was announcing that he's calling that legislative session, and he said it's going to be in November. He did not indicate a specific date. But he said that he knows that all of these vaccine mandate deadlines are coming up, and so he's shooting for, you know, for this to be a quick turnaround some legislation going. Yeah.
Right. So we can mandate. So Ascension's, world, there's a lot of concern with many health folks there. That's a national company. It does Florida. I'm not sure medical jurisdiction. This is not an area I'm really familiar with. But our legislature can ban vaccine mandates, you know, for national companies doing business in Florida, for example, right?
Yeah.
So there's no restriction on that. So the legislature, now can the governor, again, I'm still fairly new here, can the governor mandate a legislative session, or does the governor have to ask for a session and then they have to decide whether to do it or not? How does that work exactly, if you know?
That's a good question. I know that he said he asked for a legislative session. That was the phrase that he used, but I don't know exactly how that works. Yeah.
Let me ask Gene, if you have a second to, Gene's our ace producer, you know, master of information. If you can check out Florida law, you know, legislative sessions, can the governor mandate one? I'd be really curious because that's critical because, you know, all it takes is enough legislators paid off by Big Pharma and Dr. Fascist, you know, ordering them or whatever to, you know, get weak in the knees. And then you don't have a legislative session, but if the governor can mandate it, that's different. So we need to give him some backbone. We need to support him. And again, I think if you and I think we should definitely do this. Just write a limited bill to liability, full liability for any company mandating a vaccine for their workers, and also make it retroactive. We need to make it back to whenever they first declared their mandate. So anybody that got a mandate after, you know, day one of the warning, because a lot of people do this preemptively, the folks that wanted to get one would have gotten one anyway. You know, that's fine. You want to do it? Hey, listen, I think you're sadly mistaken. Did you ever hear my PSA on that, by the way? I made a PSA. I can show the recording. Well, I want to play it anyway, just because it's fun. So let me find it right here. Let me do my Biden one here. And again, if you want to use this copy of this, I can send you the MP3 and you know, feel free to share it. Here we go.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
So you've heard that played on all the major news sources around the country, right, as a public health announcement to kind of warn people.
Yeah, during all the commercial breaks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See, I make my own. I don't care. But yeah. So, but that's the problem. It's we have to reach. Well, I've divided people up and I've talked about this on Facebook. In fact, it's one of my more popular posts of late. That there's three groups in the country right now. They're the compliant who have gotten it anyway, and you know, God bless them, good luck to them. You know, I wish you all the best. I really do. There's the resistant, you know, us. They're never going to get it. And then there's the group in the middle that I think we really have to reach, and that's the coerced. Those are the people who don't want it but feel they have to get it for some reason, and they're going to regret it. I mean, I know people that have gotten the vaccine that already regret it, you know, because of various health effects from, you know, minor to moderate to severe, simply because they felt they had to do it for their job. It's really short term. And I still feel that after this is over, that when a whole bunch of people have gotten it, these companies are going to cave, just like Southwest cave. We can talk about that for a minute. You know, this is a temporary thing. And just because you lose a job doesn't mean you lose your career. There are going to be more opportunities for people, especially a smart company that wants to take people that are leaders, that want to advocate healthcare, even at the expense of their job. Those are the folks I want in my company. You know, I want a company of leaders. Action Radio, everybody here is a leader. You're a leader. I mean, Gene's a leader. We're leaders here. This is what we do. And so you attract leaders and let them go, and amazing things happen. But that's why I think we need to do a preemptive legislative thing. It wouldn't be hard to do. We just find the relevant law, you know, say where vaccine liability law is in the Florida code, and we look and search and see, you know, where we can, you know, say that to include employers who mandate a vaccine will be fully liable. We just put that into the law. We hand that to our various legislators. There's a meeting, I think, next Tuesday. Cindy was telling me about, you know, and we just say, here, this is what we consent to. What are you going to do with it? You know, hopefully you'll consider that. And if we can put a bill actually into the legislature that deals exactly with the problems you want, then they have to sort of react to it, as opposed to making up whatever they want that whoever else influences them. So I think preemptive citizen legislation is the way to go. That's why I do this. Anyway, back to you.
That's great. I think that's perfect.
Okay.
So I think that was it for the press conference. I wanted to talk about, I know you mentioned the rallies. We have two upcoming rallies. One is kind of a part two from the one that was in the Blue Wahoo Stadium that was hosted by the Panhandle Doctors for Truth. So there is going to be one happening in November. We don't have the date to release, but I will give that information to you as soon as I hear. But that is something to look forward to, because that was, you know, so great last time. And they're in the works for planning another one for November. So that's exciting to have.
Well, there's a couple of people I want to invite to it. Yeah, there's a couple of special friends of mine that I'd love to see there. And so hopefully, like I say, I'll disclose that later, too, if they accept especially. But I want to get you in contact with a couple of folks. And so it was so successful. It was such a great rally. And here's the thing, too. I don't know if you noticed, but it seemed to grow as the presentations went on. You know, it was like, I think, a double in size over the course of the event. Did you notice that?
It did. People trickled in the entire time.
Well, I think they were cell phoning. I think they were saying, hey, you got to come down here. This is great. And then other people go, yeah, come on down. You know, and all of a sudden, because this is pretty local. This is a local crowd. So probably people were within maybe 10, 15 minutes, you know, maybe up to half an hour away, were come just racing right in. It's like, yeah. And they were still catching a good part of the event. Of course, then we had the video afterwards, which I've been sharing ever since that came out. Rumble, by the way. So go to Rumble, and it's Panhandle Doctors. I've forgotten the exact title. Do you remember what it is? I mean, I could look it up.
I can look it up for you.
Okay. We have instant resources here. You want something, you just ask for it. You know. Bethel. I know it's on Rumble. Like I say, I can't have too many windows open on my computer, or it starts yelling at me. Just, you know.
I know. But, sorry. Well, I thought I had it here.
Okay, I'll find it. But here's the thing, though, too. The governor, there's a disconnect here. So the governor said there are no mask mandates in schools, and yet there are school districts still doing it, even though they're facing mass fines. The governor said we are not in a state of emergency anymore. I remember this from the press conference. You know, there's no reason to have it, you know, we don't need a vaccine mandate. You know, people are free to do it or not, and yet the companies are still doing it. So my question, and this isn't one that I expect you to be able to answer right away, but the question is, how do we get beyond the disconnect between what the governor is saying and what the governor can order through executive orders for government and these companies and school districts? You may not know the school districts, but do you see the disconnect I'm talking about? There's got to be a...
I do.
We need to, get to these people. And I think liability, you know, legislation is one of the best ways to do it. Here we go. Florida Panhandle Doctors for Truth Healthcare Freedom Rally. So once again, it's on Rumble. Florida Panhandle Doctors for Truth Healthcare Freedom Rally. It's, and I got a comment there too, by the way. You probably, next time you go, you'll see my comment with our appropriate legislation, you know, on, on full liability for vaccine makers, big tech censorship, and the bill I wrote with Dr. Solenko, reforming the FDA emergency use authorization procedure. So feel free to take that as you're sending it out. And if, as you're talking to people involved, you know, that were involved in the conference, say, look, you know, you want to do something, you know, beyond the amazing work you're doing now, this is change. This is, and people, I don't think they're really aware of the potential of citizen legislation. And so that's, it's kind of up to you and me and everybody else to sort of say, you know what, you supply the legislature with the bill. It makes it, you know, it has an infinitely greater chance of getting what you want if you basically supply them with something they can vote on and comment on and talk about in committee hearings. I think it's going to be amazingly powerful, which it's an education process. We'll get there. Okay.
Do you
have anything else? Comments? Yeah, go ahead. I tend to ramble when I'm excited. I'm excited.
Greg, I just want to say that according to this article, special sessions may be called by either the governor or by a joint proclamation issued by the Senate president and House speaker.
So if the governor calls it, if they say may be called, then, you know, I like the word shall as opposed to may. So does it appear it's mandated? If the governor says the legislature has to show up, that's a mandate for them?
Well, here under the Florida Senate, it says that it may be called by the governor. So that means the governor has a right to call a special session.
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure. Yeah,
it's right in there. On their website. And also I want to make a comment about what DeSantis yesterday and what he did and what they said, that they're also going to try to do something that other states and provinces or whoever has medical licenses for the various medical people that they can't be blackballed for not getting the vaccine and then wanting to get a license in a different state, which that would just be Florida because, you know, it is in Florida that's being involved. So I'm happy for that because unfortunately some people are having something put on their license stating that they, you know, that they have a record now because they didn't get it.
Oh, I see. Jane, do you know anything about that? Is that something we should put in legislation or is that something the governor's already working on? So you're saying, Jane, we got Jane and Jane. It's going to get a little confusing here. So you're saying, so people that are fired because they didn't get an, you know, a vaccine that's basically an illegal mandate. That goes on their record and they can't work other places? Is that a blacklisting?
What happened was, and I'm not going to give names because this guy I listen to a lot, but his wife is a nurse and she's got her own wonderful website stuff. But anyway, moved from D.C. to Florida and his wife is a nurse. And because she has a nursing license in D.C., now, because she didn't get the jab, and that, you know, she's got many reasons why. But anyway, that will go on her record. It hasn't yet, I don't think, because it's what, I don't know. Anyway, but she said then that's going to affect her ability to keep her license now in Florida, or for those people if they want to get one. And that's not right, because just because they choose not to get that, that has nothing to do with 1 year professional license. All it has to do with a mandate that your specific employer put out.
Yeah, exactly. Jane,
and
you know anything
my
about that?
My thinking is if the government still isn't mandating the White House, the Congress, Senate to get vaccinated, they're allowing all these illegals in. Quit mandating it for everybody else.
Yeah, that's a separate issue, but it's an important one. So,
I agree. I think that was the same person that was at the press conference yesterday. So she was saying that she just recently moved to Florida, and and they're making it difficult for her to get her Florida license.
Oh, I know who that was. Yeah, I remember seeing that. Yeah, I forgot her name, but you can announce it because that's a public press conference. So, you know, in fact, we should get in touch with her. In fact, I don't know if you have any contacts in the governor's office that would be available to us, you know, but, you know, as Panhandle doctors and, you know, medical freedom groups, you know, grow, this is going to, you know, these folks, these politicians, if they're smart, they're going to want to reach out anyway because, you know, we represent a ton of folks. And especially if we're writing legislation, you know, you don't think that's going to get their attention once they realize that, you know, that we have, not only do we have, we're complaining about problems, which any group can do that, but we actually have solutions and say, here, here's a way out of this. That could be incredibly powerful. So, and like I say, you don't have to tell me now, off air, you know, if we can connect with some of the folks in with both legislators and in the governor's office that might be sympathetic to this, then that's how we do it. Let's get some of the governor
there is a rally this Saturday, the 23rd, at 1 o'clock in Tallahassee at the Florida State Capitol building. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is to talk about legislation and move forward with action for medical freedom and for rights. So it's talking about vaccine mandates and mask mandates. And it is a rally with speakers. And, you know, I'm sure there will be people holding signs, you know, to bring awareness to the community. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the importance of or the impact that rallies can have. I've heard them, you know, be called a fun street party, but, you know, what action does it really do? And I was one of those people before getting involved in all this. And it depends on the people involved, of course. But what I've found with attending these rallies is you really make so many connections with people who are like-minded and that you can collaborate with and network with, because, you know, just me by myself, it's hard to meet all these people, like you're saying, inside the Capitol building, or, you know, doctors who are like-minded, but it's through these rallies, people all coming together who are like-minded, that you meet people and you make connections that are, you know, that are important, that help you take steps forward. So that's a great one coming up on Saturday in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea is to move legislation forward to protect medical freedom and parental rights.
So let's go to parental rights. How are you protecting, specifically, how are you protecting parental rights? People should know that too.
So they're talking about the mask mandates in schools, just allowing parents to choose. That's their main issue. Now, I think a lot of this that kind of is, I guess, forgotten about within this is, you know, medical freedom for children too, and parental rights. For children's medical freedom, not just for the COVID-19 vaccine, but for, you know, other issues. So I think this is all, it's great for the issues that we have now, but it's also bringing awareness and opening people's eyes to all of the other issues that parents have been dealing with for years and that, you know, we're going to continue having to deal with when this pandemic is over.
I think it's been over since last July. I think it was a normal the virus, the actual virus. I have the CDC graphs. I should give those to you. I sent them to John Cullen when he was talking about Spanish flu being the big problem now that people aren't really talking about. He's the only one saying it. It's fascinating. We had him on a couple of Thursdays ago. But when you chart you take a look at the CDC charts, COVID basically got here January of 2020, and I think most viruses have like a approximately 10-week. You know, of course, this one I think was a little bit longer, but the peak was April 15th, you know, in deaths per day. Mm-hmm. And then it reversed and it was heading down and was basically, you know, heading for zero as of July 4th. And so then all of a sudden the Dr. Fascist and the CDC start changing the numbers from deaths to cases, and they start obscuring everything. And miraculously, shock of shocks, the graph takes an immediate reversal in its turn, and all of a sudden people are dying again. I don't believe that for a second. I believe that's where the remdesivir kicked in, where if this was Spanish flu, it kicked in, where the lack of treatments for hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, which we didn't find out until a few months later, but certainly hydroxychloroquine, I knew about chloroquine from March 2nd when I first broadcasted from the Dieter Raoult study. And so you look at this, we need to, if we want to be really accurate about this, we need to start talking about, you know, the pandemic that was over, you know, July 4th, 2020, COVID Independence Day. That's what I call it. And so we need to start using accurate language as to what this is. I never use the word vaccine, except as a convenience. It's really a messenger RNA, you know, gene shot. You know, these kind of things I think are critical. Language changes so much. But one thing that I want to ask you about, mask mandates, and I never hear this, and I wish I heard this. Every time someone talks about a mask mandate, it should be followed by masks don't work. They don't.
Right.
You know, and I've heard the example of a mosquito through a chain link fence. Well, considering a virus, as I understand it, I remember reading this from a CDC document that, of course, they've recalled, that a virus is about 1,000 times smaller than the spaces between the mask. And so you're talking about a mosquito through a garage door. And that, to me, is an appropriate analogy for describing, you know, the effectiveness of most of these masks, especially the cloth ones. So you're mandating something that doesn't work. You know, in the case of the messenger, you know, the RNA shots, you're mandating something, you know, for a virus that ended back in July of 2020. You're mandating, you know, because the strain is totally different. You're mandating something that actually increases the variance in the people who get the shot and plus all the debilitating health problems. You know, so you're talking about safety. The safest thing you can do is mandate they don't get it. Kind of ironic.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I'd love to see a company do that. So, well, in the interest of safety, we've mandated that nobody in this company, you know, gets a COVID shot until they actually are proven to do what they say they do, and they're actually approved, because nothing out there is approved. But language is everything. I hope they work on that at the rally. Do you know of any proposed legislation by legislators that exists right now that we can take a look at, or are they still in the formative stages for company liability for vaccines? I'm sorry, I'll use that word again. I'm sorry. Company liability for COVID shots.
I'm sure that there are. I don't have them, you know, on hand, or I haven't read through them, but I'm sure that there are. The person who is hosting it, kind of organizing everything, is Luis Miguel, and he is running for state senate, and he's been doing an awesome job with, you know, putting things into action. So I'm excited to see him.
I have a card of his. I know who he is. He's running against, I forgot his name. You know the guy I'm talking about, Senator. It's not Rick Scott. It's the other guy. What's his name? Help me out here. I'm having a damn.
You're asking the wrong person.
Oh, I can see his face too. This is terrible. I should know. I'm multitasking here. I'm away from my microphone. I'm searching for a card for Luis Miguel, and I'm trying to think of our second senator. Gene, help me out. I'm having a brain lapse. I don't think of his name. Oh, this is going to bother. You know, as soon as we stop talking, I think about it. This is great.
Yeah, you're going to remember.
But Luis, I write this on Luis Miguel. So I'm going to get in touch with him. Obviously, it's too late because the rally's tomorrow. But if he's sponsoring it, then we need to get him on the show. And, of course, next week you can talk all about it. Okay. We're a little over time, which is fine. I don't care. I'd rather hear the information. Do you have more that we need to talk about? Was there any actions from the rally? Go ahead.
I wanted to give an update about the Ascension lawsuit. So there's one happening here in Florida, which has been highlighted on a couple of the local news networks.
Mm-hmm.
But I've recently uncovered that they're actually happening nationwide in many states. So there's huge numbers of plaintiffs that are coming together against Ascension, and they're represented by great lawyers who have years of experience with vaccine law. They're happening in Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, Oklahoma, Kansas, New York, California. So it's just very encouraging, like we talked about last week, to see, you know, that you kind of stay inside your own circle and see what's happening here, but it's also happening in different states. And so I just think that's great to, you know, hit these companies from different angles and in different states. So that's very encouraging.
Well, and here's the beauty of that, because the federal government has totally dropped the ball. First of all, they let Big Pharma buy them and buy, you know, their way out of any product liability. I mean, every company in the world that makes, you know, Joe's Widget Company has product liability, and Big Pharma doesn't.
Yeah.
That's obscene. That is obscene that they're so powerful they can buy immunity. But the states are still free to do it too. And here's the weird part. The Constitution doesn't give the federal government any jurisdiction over health matters at all. So in a way, everything that Dr. Fauci does, everything the CDC does, the FDA, the NIH, none of that is constitutionally authorized. you know, which is fascinating. Yeah. So the states are fully free under the 10th Amendment to say, well, this is our job. We can do this. So the more states now, are these class action suits, are they combining or are they doing them separately with each state so they can work with state legislation? And again, you may not know all the details, but I'm just curious.
I think most of them are actually individual lawsuits that are just operating as a group. So it's a group of plaintiffs that are, it's all individual suits, but they're operating as a group. So it's different from a class action.
Yeah. Well, the cumulative effect of all these, though, of course, is that it's going to be fascinating to watch what happens. Yeah, we're going to win this. It's just that, but we need to, you know, literally save as many people as we can from a mandate that they don't want. And I think was, you know, that horrible feeling that people have, and you probably know people like this too, that they got it, they felt they had to do it, and they didn't think of the long-term consequences. I think it's sort of like a lottery, you know, or like a reverse lottery. People think it's not going to happen to them. They'll take it, they'll be fine, and then all of a sudden when they're not fine and a certain percentage of people are not fine, you know, that would to me would be the worst feeling in the world, thinking that I could have fought longer, I could have resisted longer, I could have looked for another job, I could have, you know, slung burgers for a few months while I was, you know, waiting for this to change while these lawsuits were going through. So those are the people that I really want to reach with this. And you know, as much as you can reach out to those folks and have them you know, join the groups. Looks like Jean's here, and I want to, you know, bring her in. But also, I want to make sure we get, before you go, I want to make sure we get your contact information, websites, Facebook pages, the rally information, anything that you can give would be huge. Let me get Jean first up. Jean, what's up?
Well, I just want to make a comment about that, because you say some of them maybe, you know, didn't think, or they just had, you know, whatever reason they took it. I know a lot of people that took it because, you know, unfortunately, they were afraid of losing their job, and they needed to make that income. They could not go to flipping burgers or whatever because they needed to make that certain income because they had a family and they're taking responsibility for their family. Unfortunately, was it the right decision? You know, I can't say. But I get where they're coming from. And so it's like, I think it's just really sad. Another thing I want to say is you wanted to know the Florida senators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Marco Rubio. I just found out. I got Luis Miguel.
And Rick, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, yeah.
We got a thunderstorm overhead right now, and so if the signal suddenly quits, just give me a minute. I'm going to restart another episode. I will be back, but just in case, I want to warn you, Gene, and everybody, and Jane, that if suddenly we're not there anymore, then this happened about 2 months ago, that a lightning strike was within probably like 30 feet of me. All of a sudden, we were off the air. So if that happens, I'll be back. All right, so go ahead, Gene.
Got the senators, yeah.
Yeah. Marco Rubio, yeah, who used to be a really good guy, and then he got seduced by the dark side of the force and liked his perks and committee chairs and all the other things that seduces these people. Jane, do you see that at the state level, that the longer these folks are there, they have that same kind of institutionalized, I'd rather stay here longer than do the right thing attitude?
Yeah, I do see that.
Okay.
The longer they're in bed, the longer they become, you know, part of, they're saying that they're, they're representing, you know, Republicans, and I don't even like to use, you know, Republican versus Democrat anymore, but,
yeah.
I do see that the longer that they're involved, then, they seem to lose their true values, sadly.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. You notice I don't talk party much because whichever party is in power or whichever party somebody represents is really irrelevant to citizen legislation, because it comes from citizens for citizens. And so, you know, the more influence we can have, the better. And I don't see any. I mean, I've been calling the GP the gelding old party now for, you know, 6 months. And so it doesn't matter. But let's see if we can highlight some good people. Do you know of any particularly receptive, standout legislators that might be at the rally tomorrow that are absolutely in favor of this, that might be the ones that we could approach with citizen legislation that would be the most likely to submit it to the Florida State Legislature in this upcoming session? Because we need to know those people, too.
Yeah.
Anybody
I don't,
come to mind?
I
you don't have to mention the names,
but... A list
I'm
of
curious.
Names.
Yeah,
I can get you a list of names and send it to you off air, but I do have
okay.
to run right now.
Okay. All right.
But,
well, thank you very much.
I will give my email address before I head out. So if anyone would like to contact me, my email is janeadams with 2Ds 825 at gmail.com. Janeadams 825 at gmail.com.
All right. Let's do it again next week. Thank you, Jane. Have a great rally tomorrow.
Thank you. Thanks.
Bye.
All right. So, yeah, and, you know, we're talking about people, and Cindy, too, these are people who were not, did not plan to be advocates. They did not plan to be crusaders. They did, you know, they were quite happy in, you know, in their careers doing what they did, and all of a sudden find themselves in a position where, wait a minute, this is not a good thing. This is not a good thing at all. I want to change things completely over here. I want to do an experiment, and I hope this works, because I had a show at WBY. WEBY, 1330 AM radio. To me, this was like the dream job. It was an incredible opportunity, which I got to do for a year and 4 months. You know, we had our studio, I had the big table, I had the microphone, I had stuff spread out everywhere. I had my producer, you know, through the window. We had everything that I'd ever dreamed of in radio. And all of a sudden it ended. I mean, I'm not going to go into the details of that because, you know, I kind of promised I wouldn't. But one of the people that used to be on the show every week was Congressman Matt Gaetz. He started, you know, when I first got there, and he first got to Congress. So I started March 1st, 2017 at WBY, and he was elected in November the previous year. And then, of course, January 20th, you know, came into session with everybody else. And so this is, that was when Trump took office. So this is when Trump started, Matt Gaetz started, you know, in Congress, and he'd been in the Florida State Legislature. So we used to have these incredible conversations, and I'm not playing this. I'm not trying to shame him. I'm not trying to make him feel guilty. I wish he were back on the show. I understand what happens to people when they get, you know, better known. I mean, it's easier to do a huge national show with 5 million listeners or viewers than it is to do us right now until, of course, we're in a position with 5 million, you know, and then, of course, they're going to come by. But what was incredible was what we had built and what we were building, and it really concerns the citizenship question on the census. So if you folks remember back a little bit, we had a situation where the southern states particularly were saying, no, you can't claim illegal aliens. And the northern states, and the western states, which have huge illegal alien populations, wanted them to vote, wanted more money, wanted all kinds of stuff. And it was all illegal. The purpose of the census is to count the number of American voting citizens, and, you know, because that's who can vote. And so there's no reason to count anybody else in the census, because the whole point of the census is to apportion the members of the House of Representatives. So the only people who can vote for the House of Representatives are American citizens. So there's no reason to count illegal aliens. They keep talking about it being money. Anyway, we talked about a bunch of things, and I've never done this before, but I got the MP3 because I was able to save, you know, almost all my episodes from Action Radio. So this, again, I don't think I'm violating any copyrights. I don't think I'm doing anything I shouldn't be doing, or I wouldn't be doing it. Well, that's not true. Maybe I would. But I want to play this for you. And Gene, I'm curious your reaction. And it's almost 15 minutes long. And then we'll get us time before Alan checks in with us from Belize. But let me just play this now, and then we'll talk a bit about it when I'm back. And if you hear Tom Petty on a Tuesday morning at 7:35, it means it's time for Congressman Matt Gaetz. In our last report until after the election, Congressman, we've got to put you on hold for a while. So this is it. So let's hear as much news as we can during our chat this morning.
Well, we certainly have plenty of news to discuss. Wanted to first, though, thank you for coming out to the rally we had with Sean Hannity recently. We haven't gotten a chance to speak since then, but, you know, I hope you enjoyed that. And I didn't realize how funny Sean Hannity was. I thought he'd come and give a political speech and endorse my candidacy for Congress, but I didn't realize he had so many impressions of, you know, Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh and Bill Clinton. It was a pretty good time.
You know, in fact, I hadn't heard the impressions. I've listened to Sean for years, and so, in fact, I hope to meet him at some point. So if you ever can sort of match us up some way and throw some action radio bills his way, that'd be fabulous. But, yeah, he is a great entertainer, just a good all-around person, and a genuinely nice man. So, you know, it was good to see him again.
Absolutely, and I was grateful that, you know, he would take one of his few days off and come campaign with me in North Florida. And we definitely showed him that Sean Hannity has a lot of fans in our community. So that was a great thing. And it's good to be working side by side with Sean to try to expose some of the activity going on. But there'll be a lot of that in Washington this week, Greg. We've
yep.
got Paige giving an interview this week, and then all of America will hear from Peter Strzok. This is the individual who opened up the Trump-Russia investigation, who then was also involved in clearing Hillary Clinton, and then ended up on Robert Mueller's probe before his text messages came out showing how biased he was.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting week there. And then, of course, I'm very proud of the president's selection for Supreme Court. I think that Judge Kavanaugh is a jurist who will interpret the Constitution. You won't want to make law from the bench, and we've really got an opportunity now to reshape the court for a generation.
Yeah, it's fascinating what's happening right now. Peter Strzok, though, is interesting to me. Can you just ask him point blank how much involvement President Obama had, what he knew, when he knew it, and same thing with Hillary Clinton as both Secretary of State and as a candidate, what she knew and when she knew it?
Well, I don't know that we're going to get straight answers to those questions. I mean, Peter Strzok has proven to be someone who has a problem with the truth, who's willing to manipulate the truth. I'm really going to focus on the Robert Mueller involvement in all of this. And what struck me as very odd was that when Mueller found out about these text messages, mm-hmm. he didn't ask the FBI lovebirds about them. He didn't ask about what they meant, about whether or not the investigation had been compromised. And you only don't ask those questions if you don't want to know the answers.
Yeah. Here's a thought I just had. Do you think that the Mueller Commission or the Mueller Committee report is the insurance policy that Peter Strzok was talking about?
Yes. Yes. I believe the whole investigation, the whole Russia narrative, every facet of the Mueller beginning mm-hmm. was what was contemplated as the insurance policy against the Trump presidency, against the selection made by the American people.
Yeah. Are you going to get to ask that to him?
What's that?
Are you going to get to ask him that question?
Yeah, I expect I will. I want to be able to go through that, and I want to understand the complete lack of curiosity by Robert Mueller.
Yeah. I wish we had more public hearings. I wish we had something similar to the church hearings with the CIA. Do you anticipate more FBI hearings as things go on?
Yeah, I think that we could have Comey in. I think we could have Lynch in. I think that there are other Obama officials that we're probably going to want to hear from. So I think it's going to be a busy month in the House Judiciary Committee. And I think we've got a lot of people we need to ask tough questions to.
Yeah. You have to follow it all the way up to President Obama. Otherwise, we're never going to know the whole story. But I have another question for you, and I think I've asked you this before. On the FBI, do you think it needs some kind of overhaul, or the theory I've put forward that you split investigation and leave that federal and maybe take enforcement out, or some kind of restructuring, or do you want to leave the FBI as it is?
We cannot leave the FBI as it is. We cannot allow the system to continue to be infected by bias.
Okay.
There has to be more transparency, more oversight, more redundancy. And I think that we have to start setting consequences when the FBI doesn't turn over records to Congress when it deals with their own conduct that's in question. And so, yeah, I think that when this is over and said and done, we could probably do that in a bipartisan way, mm-hmm. Greg. I think that Republicans and Democrats both have an interest in making sure that we've got a justice system that isn't infected by politics. And so when we finally come to Donald Trump's presidency is not going to be interrupted by this witch hunt investigation, hopefully the Democrats will work with us, because there are actually a few Democrats who have some good ideas about transparency, but they're unable to advance them because they can't see past their own partisan lens at this time.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And, you know, if you look back at Watergate, a lot of that was run by Republicans. You know, Howard Baker investigating a Republican president. So they put politics behind them and actually did the right thing. And hopefully you can inspire, you know, Democrats to do the right thing to follow this through. But I want to change the subject a little bit. We had a big discussion on the show July 5th about this judge who wanted to allow these lawsuits to go forward to take the citizenship question out of the census. We actually wrote a bill with the callers here, and then I wrote it up that night and sent it to you over the weekend. Any follow-up with that? Anything happen with that?
Actually, I love some of the ideas that were there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of them required legislation or how many of them the Trump administration can implement.
Okay.
And so, we have reached out. We've also reached out to the Florida Department of State on that question because, look, we've got to be able to ask people if they're citizens of this country, mm-hmm. if they're here legally. I mean, if we start going down the road where we're not even allowed to ask the question if people are in our country legally, then we start to normalize this lawless conduct.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really central to the success of the Trump presidency to get the border secured. I know we've done a lot on enforcement, But if we continue to look the other way, if we don't do E-Verify, if we don't end chain migration, you know, I'll view it as a failure, as a missed opportunity. Got the shot now. We should be able to do it.
Yeah, and we actually call for proof of citizenship, not just asking the question, but have verified proof, whether it's passport, naturalization papers, birth certificate,
yeah.
Things like that. Yeah,
yeah, you can't just be a note from your mom or your application. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, here's the thing, too. That's a big bill. If you split that up, if you wanted to just maybe file part of it and get back to us, but anything you can do to get part of that or even show some to the president and say, this is what, you know, constituents in Florida are saying, you know, all of this is good for our citizen legislature and shows that we are a viable a prospect here that we can get, that we can just have regular folks come up with ideas. I can get them directly to you. You can maybe get from the president, other members of Congress, and we can legislate. We can bypass all the special interest groups and the money and the lawyers and the donors and everything like that and have direct input into the government.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've already seen that happen on oversight.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the oversight ideas. You know, gosh, we weren't even holding hearings on these questions, Greg,
yep.
when you and I started having these discussions.
Last year, one-year anniversary.
The House Judiciary Committee has got to hold open hearings. They've got to call people forward, and they've got to start an investigation of this
yep.
because when we began, you know, before Action Radio, there was a theory that we would all just sit back and wait for Robert Mueller, and whatever he did, he did. And it was only kind of through, you know, the suggestions we got through Action Radio and really from people all over the country that
yeah.
we said, no, we gotta peel back a few layers of this onion and see what really happened here. So we've seen it in oversight work, and there's no reason it wouldn't work to try to get some laws changed.
Well, congratulations to you and to Congressman DeSantis and to Congressman Jordan and all the folks that are doing everything they can to fight a fight that is not popular, even with a lot of Republicans, especially the leadership.
Well, you see what they're doing to Jim Jordan.
Well, this is why I had this bill that I'll send you again, too. You know, it's like anytime a congressman person does something good or somebody's running for office, you get the obligatory Democrat sex scandal. I mean, this is just so predictable, it's ridiculous. And then the accusations go away after the election or after whatever happens. You know, Congressman Jordan's up for possible election as Speaker, and he's extremely effective at what he does in Congress going
yes.
after the FBI. And this is what happens. You get a bogus sex scandal.
It's so bogus. And Jim Jordan is not accused of doing anything improper. He's accused of not knowing something that some people think he should have known 28 years ago.
Yeah, what
so,
is that?
I mean, my question is, how is Jim Jordan supposed to prove
mm-hmm.
that he didn't know something 28 years ago? I mean, it's just, it's an impossible position to be in, and I am absolutely certain that Jim Jordan is having these allegations come out because he's one of our best members at conducting oversight.
Yeah.
And so they're going after our best players with this crap, and it's really frustrating. But and I think it's a message to the
mm-hmm.
rest of us that if you ask tough questions, if you demand answers from the FBI, that you know, there are people out there, I'm not saying in our government, probably outside our government, but there are people out there who will make your life miserable. And it's really not good for the Congress and not good for the country.
So more people have to ask more tough questions, you know, say, hey, we're not stopping. You're just going to make us bolder. This is what happens with me. You stand in my way, I get angrier. Thank you. Is there any kind of House ethics rules or due process regarding these accusations or allegations to maybe protect someone, like we have for criminals who are accused of crimes?
There is a process in the House of Representatives when people are accused of unethical conduct,
mm-hmm.
where there's an investigation. There are not many due process rights because it's not a court of law,
right.
But that process has not even been triggered as it relates to Congressman Jordan. With Congressman Jordan, he's essentially being tried in the media,
mm-hmm.
and he's completely unable to defend himself because, again, like, how do you prove a negative? I mean, I'm just sitting there thinking, if someone accused me of knowing something that I didn't know 28 years ago, what would be the way I would develop the evidence to show I didn't know it?
Yeah, well, guilty until proven innocent. If you're already judged guilty until proven innocent for something you didn't know, that's an impossible standard.
It really is, and I think that's why this is how these allegations have manifested.
Yeah.
Jim Jordan is such a good man. He's been fighting the fight. He's one of my mentors here in the Congress.
Yeah.
He's actually, I can break a little bit of news, in the month of August, he's going to come down and campaign with me in Northwest Florida. So Northwest Florida people get a chance to see him and meet him, what a good guy he is.
That'd be great.
But it's just, it shows you how There are some very dedicated people in Washington that are working against the Donald Trump agenda,
mm-hmm.
and they are willing to do anything to stop people who are making the changes that we've got to make to save this great country.
Yeah. It's amazing what we're covering today. We have less than a minute, about 45 seconds. I'll leave it to you, and then we have to go.
Well, people need to be out there talking about the good virtues of Judge Kavanaugh. I think that the left is going to come after him with a visceral hatred. They're going to spend millions of dollars. And I'm hoping that Northwest Floridians, you know, at church, at the water cooler, at the store, will be talking up the value of reshaping the court in the way of constitutional conservatives. It's why so many Republicans and conservatives voted for Donald Trump, because they really believe he would deliver on these promises. And I'm so proud of the nominee. So a great time. And if listeners don't hear me for the next 45 days, it's not that I didn't want to call in. It's that your radio station has a policy of, I guess, not having folks too close to an election.
We have to go right now. And that was it. That was last time we had Matt Gaetz on the air. And I'm not doing this, like I say, to shame him. I'm doing this to hopefully inspire him to come back on the show. But we had something pretty amazing. And just to give a background story, and this is back in 2018. This is July of 2018. And we had July 4th of that year, I read the Declaration of Independence on the air. Now we have all of our reporters joining in who want to. July 5th of that year, and I'll probably play this one of the weeks too, we wrote a bill on the air. And I'm going to edit out the commercials and the stuff from WBY. Just, you know, like I say, copyright, whatever provisions there are, and just let you hear the callers. But just to show you how this actually works. So the callers, we had eight callers, and I have eight paragraphs in the bill mandating the citizenship question on the census. And so what we were able to do with that was then post it on writeyourlaws.com, and then I sent it to Congressman Gaetz, and who reviewed it and got back to us on the Tuesday. So from Thursday when we wrote it to Tuesday, we're talking Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 6 days. Okay. So it's from writing a bill, posting the bill, and getting a response from a sitting member of Congress was 6 days. And so that's how fast Action Radio can work. And I figured we were all set. Once I had that, when we talked about this being a viable way to get legislation to members of Congress so that you know, they can then take it and maybe submit it. And it went to, I'm pretty sure it went to the White House, the House Freedom Caucus, things like that. And so as far as I was concerned, we were on our way. What I didn't know was I got fired 3 days later. And so that was not only my last interview with Congressman Gaetz, it was my third last show. And so this was on a Tuesday, and Friday, I was told that was my last show. And so to me, it's such a huge waste, because we kind of lost contact with Congressman Gaetz. He, you know, hasn't called this show yet. I'm sure he will. It's only a matter of time. But we had something, we proved that Action Radio works. We proved that Action Radio, the whole concept of being able to write bills on the air. And like I say, I'll play that show sometime too. I do have to edit it though. And then posting it on our website, writeyourlaws.com. And then from there, you know, like I say, having a sitting member of Congress who, I mean, happens to be in our district. So, you know, he's, I think, lucky enough to be in, you know, have the world's only citizen legislature right here. I just hope, like I say, we can reestablish contact, get him back on the show, and continue what could have been an amazing process, a government citizenship changing process whereby regular people write legislation that gets directly to members of Congress. Anyway, that's where we started, and this is just a temporary little setback here, but we will pick that up again. Gene, what'd you think?
Oh my gosh, it disgusts me, Greg. He's done absolutely crap. I'd say vote his butt out.
Okay.
What has he done? I look back at everything that he talked about.
Mm-hmm.
He's just another pretty boy. He talks a lot, no action.
Well, there was a
no
time
action.
When there was action.
It's crazy.
I hate to sound
conceited. It's like all those people he talked about,
yeah.
They were doing these
uh-huh.
hearings, nothing ever came of it. Nothing.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. they should have. Someone should have been held accountable. So it's just like, no. I'd say if I lived in Florida, I would do whatever I can to vote him out because he's incompetent. I mean, it's like, You have one person. One person can make a difference to start something going. He could have been
mm-hmm.
that person. But no, he just talks a lot, but his mouth and his actions don't line up.
Yeah,
that's
why I think he kind of lost his way. And, you know, I didn't expect that reaction. That's really interesting because I do, you know, like I say, I'm still an advocate for him. I think there's a huge amount of potential there. But there was a time when we were, you know,
talking about ideas. When we talk about the Mueller Commission being the insurance policy, that was 6 months ahead of anybody else. We were on the cutting edge, and we used to exchange ideas, and we talked about things, and those ideas, as he said, ended up in Congress with oversight. But the biggest problem at the time when he was there that first term, back in 2017, 2018, was the fact that you had Paul Ryan, a speaker, and Paul Ryan was the deep state agent. He didn't let those hearings go through. He didn't let bills come to the floor. So there's a lot of things that happen. But to be quite honest about Matt Gaetz, there's a lot of questions. You know, where is he? Why isn't he more responsive to the district? And I'm saying he was. Something happened along the way. You know, it was like I call hair gel like the moment of transition from a very responsive, you know, a congressman that called me every week, and we were able to talk about ideas. Like, we had bills. I mean, it was a direct phone. I got a bill right to him. And I was hoping he would submit it to Congress and have them consider it. It wouldn't have gone anywhere simply because of Paul Ryan. And the Democrats and the media would have immediately screamed and yelled and went to actually ended up in the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court had a bogus ruling overruling it, whereas I've already proven that it's absolutely constitutional. So the strategy was there. The logic was there. The system was there. Everything was there, you know, and then something happened. And so this is how life works. So the question is, now what do we do? So we had a situation. We had a system that where we could write legislation on the air, where we could post it, we could get it to a member of Congress, and from there, hopefully, it would then proceed. Of course, that's up to them. We don't force anybody to do anything. But I'm pretty sure the president saw it, our citizenship bill. When I get to talk to Donald Trump someday, which I'm sure I will, I'm going to ask him about that and say, hey, you know, here's where we were. And I kind of wish that the congressman had introduced us to Donald Trump, because we'd have that 5 million listeners. We'd be there. We'd be, you know, a huge impact on the national debate. We'd be a lot further ahead than we are now. So like I say, the system was there. It didn't go.
Matt is all for himself. Why do you think he travels all over the country for these pump up me rallies instead of even going to Florida and doing something? Let's do something. Let's make a difference. He's not. He's just out there thumping his chest. No, I lost. After listening to this, I even lost more respect for the guy. Because you say, oh, Paul Ryan was in charge. Yes, Paul Ryan was in charge. But you know what? He could have spoke out more. He could have done more. He didn't.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
He was a sheep.
Yeah, like I say, in my own arrogant way, I like to think that, you know, when I was able to, you know, give a bunch of ideas and have an influence, and the other folks, like you said, were talking about with the oversight hearings and things like that, that made a huge difference. Something happened. And I think the same thing happened to Marco Rubio.
Well, but the thing is, he could have been clueless back then, too. So he called in so you could kind of give him some insight, guidance as what to do. So he could go back to Washington and say what you said. Because he had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't think it was guidance so much because that's, you know,
well, you know, just input as even the bills.
Well,
he didn't come
input up
with the bills on his own.
No, we did. We did. We absolutely did. And this is the
so
thing,
just
too.
Shows
this is
he's
what,
incompetent.
Yeah.
He's clueless.
Yeah.
He's just out for himself.
Okay. Fair
that's
enough.
That's my thought. I don't know if anybody has any other opinion, but
yeah, wants to join
it's like,
us,
what
you know,
has he done? What has he done for the state of Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. I don't see anything.
Mostly,
he's
done what most people in Congress do, brought back money. You know, brought back a huge defense budget, brought back some other things. But, yeah, I think that things changed for him when he stopped calling the show because
even,
we, you know,
you talk about defense. I mean, look at the panhandle. I mean, they already had all those bases there. It's
we still
like
do.
Gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, don't do us any favor. It was already here.
And it's interesting that the military – the veterans and the active duty don't have a particularly favorable view, I think, because he didn't serve in the military. And I've heard some other different things. But one of the biggest problems that he has that a lot of people have in Washington is they lose touch with their district. And it's like, who's the woman up in Wyoming that just voted to have Steve Bannon? Cheney, yeah. Liz Cheney. You know, she's completely out of touch with Wyoming. They don't like her at all. And Gaetz is in danger of that here if he doesn't come back to the district. Now, I proposed doing like a town hall meeting at our Imogene Theater, this beautiful 1912 theater here in Milton, you know, or something, you know, in Pensacola or something, you know, where we'd come back and be more representative. But this is definitely a problem. I think, you know, we'd have a lot more impact and he'd have a lot more, I guess, influence and respect in the district for simply going back. I mean, he used to call us the Ideas Factory. And so we had an amazing amount of ideas, but I can't walk into the halls of Congress and drop bills into the hopper, but he can. And so whereas my specialty and our specialty here at Action Radio is ideas and legislation, you know, hopefully his specialty is getting them through, getting them to the floor and getting them passed. And so that's not happening. And I haven't seen, I don't know any bills that he's particularly sponsored that would make, you know, a huge difference like the bills we have on vaccine liability, on correcting the censorship problems of big tech with Section 230. You know, we basically solve the problems for these people. Same thing I was talking about with Jane Addams earlier with the Medical Freedom Report. We can supply the legislature with the ideas, with the bills, you know, make it as easy as possible for them to just, you know, put it in the hopper and send it through committee and pass it. You know, of course, they're going to amend things. I expect them to amend things. I don't expect anything to go through as we write it. But the thing is, you know, if we get 80%, 90% maybe of what we put through, and we make their lives easier so they don't have to think, it's like giving journalists, you know, all the information. You know, so we basically write their articles for them. It's the same kind of thing. This is how stuff is done. Legislation is not written by members of Congress or the state legislatures. It's written by lobbyists, by special interest groups, by corporations, by wacko, you know, folks, by huge fundraisers, by donors, things like that. That's who writes legislation. So our job is to be a counter to that. That's what we're trying to do here. So we shall see. Yeah, you have a much less favorable opinion of him than I do. But I have hope. I see the potential that if he can, Gates were talking about, if he can get, you know, back on the show. I mean, I think he called the show because he was used to calling the show. He called the show every week with the previous host, too. The difference is what we talked about. Now, what I talked
right,
about
but I
was,
think,
was
well,
substantive,
there you go. He,
you know,
talked,
issues and bills.
He already had a following there.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah. And because,
yeah, no, that's,
and probably because that was local. Uh-huh. You know, he could hit the masses there, whereas you're national. You would think
yeah.
that it's like, okay, you talk to on the radio station. What's the difference? This would actually be better for him for the fact that people around the country could hear about what he's doing, what they're doing. But no, I think he's just thinks he's a pretty boy, just looking out for himself. I wish someone from the Panhandle that does have military experience would run against him and say, hey, you know, I live here. I respect
well,
the people
time,
here. I will do what's best for the people here and not run
yeah.
all over the country preaching and everything else you're doing and not get anything done.
Well, it's interesting. I had Chris Dosa on the show, too, and Chris was the one who ran against, you know, Matt Gaetz last time. I don't know if he's running this time, but I'm certainly – and I have them both. I've interviewed them both. And so, you know, it'd be great to have all these folks that will be running for Congress. I mean, the election year pretty much starts November. So we're about a month away from the kickoff of the 2022 midterm elections. And hopefully, as this show grows, these folks are going to come knocking on our door. And the invitation is there. Anybody, state legislator, local legislator, county commissioner, you know, school board, you know, you want to come on the show? Just let me know. It's really easy to do. Or just call in and say, hey, I'm running for this. And it's like, okay, cool. But you're going to get questions. You know, the first question, you know, I have for Congressman Gaetz is, you know, where's our citizen legislation? Where, you know, where are you going with that? So I'm waiting for Alan to call. Hopefully he'll try the Skype line here. So when that appears, we'll get him on. This is probably a good time while we're doing something. Let me play one of my Santa Rosa Volunteers ones. I have to do the back one of the Anti-Federalist number 6. So I'll play that, and then we'll see if Alan's on the line. And if not, I have a ton of stories for you guys. So it's going to be a busy day. We have lots to do until the next report. Derek can't make it. Derek is on special assignment, so he'll talk to us next week about where he is. So we don't have our economic report, which is too bad. I really enjoy our Friday reports. We've got Derek Park at the bottom of this hour, 7:30, and then we have Jim Dykes at 8:00, and then at the bottom of that hour, 8:30, Donnie Chapman. He's got a shooting match. So we don't know if he's going to check in either. So we might have a lot of time for stories. So let me just play you a couple of different things here. Let me give you the intro for why I do Santa Rosa Volunteers. Then I'm going to play you our original Declaration of Independence one, and I'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school.
Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com. Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio.
Okay, so I've just been communicating with Alan. He's trying to call in, so we're going to see if we can get the Skype line working. This is going to be a challenge. It's one of those little technical difficulty things. So while he's trying to do that, let me play you one more original Declaration of Independence broadcast on Santa Rosa Volunteers on our original founding documents. Be right back in a couple of minutes.
This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled "What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery," December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government, that we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers.
Oh boy, I'm excited now. If all goes well, I'm going to hit the line here, and this should be Alan Dawson calling us from Belize. Is this my bud, my friend, you know, who I haven't talked to for way too long? Alan, is that you?
Yes, Greg. Yes, it's such a joy and lots of happiness and excitement to hear from you and to hear you on your show.
Well, welcome. Let me give you a round of applause.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, no problem at all. So Alan is an incredibly special person, and we met. In fact, Shelby's going to join us some of these weeks, too. So I was working on cruise ship. Shelby had a and I'm not going to give the name of the company just because I'm trying to protect all the folks I can. But so I'm working for a cruise company. I'm on board. I did these two wonderful weeks as an assistant cruise director for her group. And the problem was I got so amazingly sick because I flew out from California. I picked up something along the way. And both times I lost my voice. And it was, and here I am trying to, you know, lead tours and do things like this. And there's nothing worse than a tour guide without a voice, right? But the one person that I met both time, on both cruises that I did was Alan Dawson. So Alan Dawson is a tour guide in Belize. And so we've been talking for a while. We sort of lost touch for a bit. Things got crazy. But I wanted to bring on Alan because I want to find out what's happening, A, in Belize, and B, in the Caribbean. And so, and of course, any of the neighboring countries too, especially with our border being so open. And you don't hear people flooding out of Belize, you know, running across our southern border. And so Alan's just, like I say, he's the coolest. So I want to find out what's going on. First of all, how you doing? How's the tour biz? How's Belize? You know, and then we'll talk about whether COVID, like, shut your tourism industry down. So what's going on, dude? What's happening in Belize?
Well, apart from lots of rain right now, we've been having rain for, this is going to be our third day, but it seems like it's going to die off a little bit later this afternoon.
Okay.
So I tell you what, I haven't been doing much in tours right now, but I've been with the Calypso Train Tours, and we do the okay. city tour that goes around the city. And I tell you, we did it on Wednesday in the rain. The first two tour was great, but the last one, the third, we should have had four, but the fourth had to be totally canceled out because of the rain.
Right.
Yeah, so, but the group had their ponchos on, and we made it fun. I was the guy that day. they made it fun, and, you know, when we were almost at the halfway mark, then we had thunder and lightning storms, so I was a part of it this Wednesday, but, yeah, the virus had taken a toll on the country's economy, just like all over the world, you know.
Right.
And the governments, they're dealing right now with a truce with some of the gangs in the south side of the city. Yeah, that's some of the hot stories that's happening here in Belize right now. Apart from that, I mean, it's a cool, laid-back country, some tropical
weather,
you know.
You know, and if anybody hasn't been there, a lot of folks will you know, buy houses down there because they can build a mansion for what it costs to, you know, buy a house in San Francisco. It's amazing, and it's friendly. It's a great place. I love the two times I've visited there. I hope to be back on a fairly regular business once I get Action Radio 1, you know, our own personal jet, once the show gets big. So I might even broadcast in Belize. I should probably spend a week there every year and just make sure that we get some broadcasts in there because it's a great destination. It's, if you haven't been there, it's a one country. It's originally it was British Honduras, right? Isn't that where you started?
That's right. Until we got our independence on it was September 21st of 1981.
Okay. See, I didn't know it was that recent. That's interesting. And so, were there any advantages that you saw as being part of the British Commonwealth, and is there still British influence there, or are you really just loving your independence like we do here? I'm just curious.
You know what? I think that for the most part, people enjoy the being an independent country.
Okay.
But I've been hearing a lot of people missing some of the effects of when we were under the British rule as
okay.
far as how life has gotten, you know.
Well, that's
but,
interesting.
I mean, we just completed 40 years of being an independent country, and a lot has happened being an
okay.
independent country. A lot has changed, you know.
Well, how big is Belize? I don't think people realize it's not a huge country. You don't have a massive population. You know what? How big is the place there? Do you have the latest stats?
Okay, first of all, we're south from Mexico, south of Mexico,
right.
and
uh-huh.
We're about 180 miles long. That's from north to south. East to west, we're only about 68 miles wide, and
mm-hmm.
a total area of 8,867 square miles. And to put us into perspective, we're about the size of the state of Massachusetts in the U.S. Or in the U.K.,
wow.
we're about the size of Wales.
The size of
and
Wales? Yeah.
Population-wise,
yeah.
we're
okay.
just around 400,000 now. 400,000 is our population now.
Wow. Yeah, and so to be an independent country with, you know, you don't have a huge landmass, you know, you don't have, you know, major industries that I know of. I think tourism still the biggest industry for Belize?
You know what? Up until COVID it was, but it's slowly coming back now. I mean, we were very happy to receive our first cruise ship back in July of this year. And I tell you what, it's picking up. I mean, Wednesday we had three ships in port Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Even though it was a rainy day. Yeah, so it's starting up. It's picking up. November is going to see some increase too. Royal Caribbean is back. Norwegian is here. Carnival
okay.
is here, and they're bringing in more ships now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, are they all just in talking to Shelby, if I remember that, you know, these are all, you know, quote, fully vaccinated passengers. Does Belize have any restrictions?
Yes.
On people coming, in other words, do you have to be, quote, fully vaccinated? And I haven't, you know, we've done a ton of details about the dangers of the vaccine, and I'm dead against it. I think it's if you want to take it, that's fine. But to mandate it, you know, you can't mandate an experimental shot that messes with your DNA. That's my concern. But how about the government of Belize? Do they have a restriction, or is it the cruise lines themselves that are putting restrictions on vaccines for people, or both?
No, I think I want to say both because, I mean, first of all, most of these people that are coming on ships, we know that they're fully vaccinated, right? And the few that are not vaccinated, I want to say most of the younger kids, I think, they would go on what they call a bubble tour. They'll go on a separate tour. But like for the bigger operators and the other little small operators, they have to be fully vaccinated to be on the tours. If you're not vaccinated, then you go on that bubble tour, and so that everything could be traced if there's something found after that tour or something, right? But people flying into the country also, most of them are fully vaccinated, but if you are not vaccinated, you need to come in with a negative test PCR result. You need to come in with that. That will get you in pretty safe and fast. If you haven't done a test, if you got at the airport, you don't have that, they will do a test before you leave the airport, and then you will be assigned to a specific hotel for a period of time. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. See, from what I know about this, the PCR test is a fraud test. It's not designed to test for viruses. We had John Cullen on, if you go back to my show, a couple Thursdays ago. He thinks that what's really going on is the Spanish flu. They've sort of resurrected that. To destroy the economy, mess with Trump's administration and all these other things. So there's a lot going on there. So the PCR test, they magnify the results so many times. That, you know, as John said, you could find COVID on a grain of rice. I mean, they can find it anywhere they want. So most of those PCR tests are false positive. You know, and the idea
that
you have to be
hearing.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, tell me what you've been hearing. I'm curious. What's going on?
Yeah, no, we've been hearing that's what it is. It's like fraud, the PCR test. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
I really don't follow it up too much, Greg. I don't really follow it up too much. I mean, to start to work with the cruise tourism, I personally had to be double jabbed before I got off the line again, you know. So I got my vaccine. My last shot was in June, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to ask you about that because now I'm going to worry about you, you know. But I've got some things you can do. Go, finish your thought, and then I got some ways to get over your vaccine injury.
No, go ahead.
All right, so here's what you need to do. So one of my friends is Dr. Zelenko. Dr. Zelenko, I got to know because a friend of the show, knows him. And so we got him on the show. He's the one that wrote President Trump, the lawful president, the one that should be in the White House. And what I didn't get political when I was working with the crew stuff, but now I can do it because I got my own show. That's the difference. Yeah. And I'm the boss, so I can say whatever I damn well please, and I usually do.
Yeah.
But what's interesting was Dr. Zelenko was the one that came up with the protocol of hydroxychloroquine, zinc, I think it was zinc sulfate originally, azithromycin, and that was his protocol. And then, of course, they added vitamin D3 and vitamin C. And so what he found was early treatments, and I got that originally from Dr. Dieter Raoult in Marseille, France, and I reported this March 2nd of 2020. So we were way ahead of the curve. On this. And then Dr. Zelenko came on the show in August. I wrote a bill with him to reform the FDA, the emergency use authorization procedure. And like I said, there's a ton of information I could give you. So if you want to, you know, delve more into this, I've got a bunch of stuff. But what we found, and I had him on the show recently, and also Dr. Judy Mikovits on the show, both of which are just amazing sources of information, is that the same things that prevent COVID and cure COVID will also help you recover from your vaccine injury, so it'll have the minimum effects on your health as possible while still complying with the law. So what you want to do, and I'll send you the protocols, you can go to VladimirZelenkoMD.com. And you can always get the podcast and anything that you miss here, VladimirZelenkoMD.com. I'm going to send you the protocol anyway. But you want to get, if you can, now is hydroxychloroquine, is that available without a prescription or can you get one or is it not available in Belize?
I'm not familiar. I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Well, I'll give you something to research. Anyway, the other one is quercetin. Quercetin is the non-prescription form of hydroxychloroquine. That's what I take because I don't need a prescription here because I don't have anything. I think I had COVID in January 2020. And I've been perfectly healthy ever since. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
You had it?
Oh, I'm sure I did. I didn't get officially tested for it, but I had all the symptoms, except I didn't have a fever. I didn't lose taste and smell, but I had the worst cough I've ever had in my life. In fact, if you listen to my show, you know, late December, early January 2020, I sounded like hell. I mean, I sounded so bad. I was trying to get guest host. This is when I started doing a guest host hour because I couldn't talk, right? I couldn't sleep. I had to sleep sitting up. I was miserable with this. Of course, we didn't know what it was. This is the beginning of January. It was right after New Year's, right, of 2020. We didn't find out until the end of January. I went, oh, I guess I had COVID.
Right.
But I realized, you know, and I'm over that magic 60 now, you know, and so a couple of years ago, you know, I was still up in that higher risk group, and I didn't have any medicine because I didn't know about it. I just slept for a couple of days, and I got over. I was fine, right? And so if you have a recently healthy – oh, yeah. Well, you know, like I said, we didn't know what we didn't know, right? So with a relatively healthy immune system, which I have because, you know, I'm still exercising, you know, and actually I'm losing weight now too, so I'm going to come back a total chick magnet next time you see me. So introduce me to a Belize –
my size, so then.
Yeah, so you got to introduce me to a Belize babe, okay? So I'll come down and
– Sure will, man.
Yeah, it'd be great fun. Anyway, to make a short story as long as possible, there are things, the same things that cure COVID, prevent COVID, also reduce the effects of the vaccine, because what it is the spike proteins. So your body teaches, the shot teaches your body how to make COVID. I mean, it literally does, how to make COVID so that your body will then produce antibodies to it. It's stupid. It's insane and it's dangerous. And long-term, you know, I'm so glad you don't sound like you have any health effects, which I'm really happy about. But you can prevent them. In fact, any member of your family that had to do this or even chose to do this, you know, you can, like I say, quercetin, zinc, you know, like 20 milligrams, 30 milligrams of zinc, vitamin C, like 1,000, vitamin D3, I think like 5,000 international units, which are a fraction of a milligram. Jean can tell us about that.
Right.
I want to bring her on in a minute anyway, just to talk to you. So vitamin D3, vitamin C, zinc, and either a quercetin or hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. One of those things, the human form, not the horse one. Use the one made for people. They have a people version, you know. So you can minimize the effects of the vaccine and put yourself long term in the best, you know, situation you can while deriving whatever benefit. I think they actually reduce your immunity. I think they're down to like, you know, from 60% down to about 40%. That's why they do the boosters. So please don't get any more shots. Please, please, please. You know, you're my friend. I want to make sure that you're around for a long time so I can come visit and check out some Belize babes. Yeah. So what are you hearing? Do you have any more information? Like I said, I know you're not delving into it all the time, but any particular news on the Belize front, or are they opening things up a little bit? Do you have like mask mandates or anything? Yeah.
Yes. Mask mandate, that is a must. I mean, if you ever caught without wearing it properly over your nose and your chin, you will be fined $500. That's $250 US dollars.
What?
Oh, yeah. And
what?
That was one of the things. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They don't
and,
work.
And the mandate.
They don't work.
Yeah.
Alan, they don't work. It's like a mosquito going through a garage door. The virus going through those masks. They don't work. They don't. Oh,
yeah.
God.
So the mandate thing is what the people, they're having issues with getting the vaccine forcibly. I mean, nobody wants things to be forced into their bodies, right? So people are fighting against that. We have anti-vaxxers here in Belize, and it's only a small portion of our population has been vaccinated so far. I think it's only like 30%.
Oh, interesting. How's your COVID problem then? How's your COVID problem? If you only have 30% that have gotten the vaccine injury, you know, how bad is COVID?
It's about 2,750 active cases right now.
Okay.
Remember, our population is only 400,000 people, right? And then we have
right.
I was just reading the statistic last night. Let me see if this thing will throw me off. I'm on my
Well, but that's we'll talk next week.
I'm
having fun, though. This is cool, yeah. Yeah, feel free to get your statistics.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So I could check one of the recent statistics they just posted last night.
Okay.
And, it was during the – okay, I can't pull it up right now. And I know for the sake of time, I won't be able to do it.
Well, but, no, I got we got another half hour. We can just keep chatting on the phone. Anybody wants to join us, you want to talk to my friend Ellen Dawson, tour guide in Belize, you know, hop on the line now, 215-383-3832, or you can call our Skype line. And I don't have it memorized, but it's on every broadcast. I now put the Skype line, you know, up near the top of the page so you can find it there. Did you have any trouble logging on, connecting with us by Skype?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I just punched in the Skype address you gave me there, and it just shoot me right into your show.
Perfect. Yeah, I've got it set up. I spent a long time with a guy in London directly forwarding calls in here. Okay, back to stats. You looked up, what did you have more information on that? On the statistics
not
stuff?
Finally, my friend. Yeah, I had it set last night, but when I went to bed, I just lost the statistics.
Hey, listen.
But, I mean, it was showing actually the official report from, and we get a daily report on it. We get a daily report like the active cases, the new testing done, the total test done, the mortality rate.
Yeah,
but we are 420 something deaths so far, which is I always say it's too much for a small population, right?
But well, how many of those guys got? How many of those got early treatment? Did any of those people get hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin? Did they get early treatment, or were they just sent to the hospital and you know put on ventilators, which is like a death sentence? I mean, I hate to say, I hope I'm not.
No,
you know,
no,
you don't have
no. They
personal,
want treatment.
But, you know, they got treatment.
Treatment.
Did they get the drugs that they banned here? Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin? I mean, you may not know, but I'm just curious.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure if those are here in the country. I hear very little about them.
Uh-huh.
Whenever I hear about it, it's on a talk show or something on the radio, on the media.
Well, how much media? Where do you get your media? Who's broadcasting into Belize? Of course, you get the internet, so you can get anybody you want. But where do you get your information? I'm just curious.
We get a lot of the CDC stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I was thinking like media stuff. Does like cable pick up all the American like news channels from, you know?
The cable company.
CNN and Fox and you got all those guys down there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How about British?
We got all
BBC?
Those.
BBC?
BBC, we get that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, BBC is one of the popular ones that people have been listening to for many, many years down in Belize. It's one of the most trusted media that the locals here would listen to, the British.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I know some of my friends that they love the Al Jazeera stuff. Have you had a chance to see some of the Al Jazeera news?
I have. It's kind of funny. That's out of Saudi Arabia, right? Or where's it at?
Yeah. I have a couple of buddies that love that media service there. That's all they watch.
Are they broadcasting in English?
Yeah. All English broadcasters, English speakers, with accents.
Are they? Well, I mean, listen, I have an accent to you. You have an accent to me. Everybody has an accent.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, just depends. Everybody has an accent. It just depends on where you are. And if people say, "Oh, you're talking with a funny accent."
Right.
Oh, really? Yeah, go to their home. You'll be the one with the funny accent. But that's amusing. So. Al Jazeera, I never thought about that, but that is very interesting. So, Gene, we got to check into Al Jazeera news and let's get the Saudi Arabian report. Well, Saudi Arabia is changing now. Are you getting a lot of Saudi tourists? Are you getting folks in the Middle East dropping into Belize?
Not much. No, not much.
Okay. Where do tourists come from? I mean, the United States obviously is a huge one. I imagine Britain second, but where else? On your tours, where else are people showing up from?
We get a lot of people from Europe. We get a lot of people from Europe, like France, Italy, Germany. We have a lot of German people that come down here, people from Australia.
They travel. Germans travel.
I'm talking about the ones that fly in, right? The overnight tourists. Yeah.
Wait a minute, overnight? You fly to Belize for a day trip? For lunch?
Yeah,
what are they doing?
Week.
Really? Oh, a week. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah, they fly here, stay for a week on the island. They just share they share their itinerary around from island to mainland activities. You know, we have a lot of these archaeological sites, so they try to visit the four main ones, like the one you've been to, Altunha. We have
Altunha. Yeah. Hey, listen,
remember that one, right?
I remember it very well because I was there twice. But yeah, just to let folks know, standing on top of a Mayan pyramid is fascinating. And it was hot, the bugs were there, and I didn't care. We had a great time. And then went to this fabulous place for lunch afterwards, and it's this outside restaurant. We all sat outside, and of course, I'd already lost my voice. You know, it was pretty crazy. But the pyramids themselves, and you realize that this is, how old is Altunha? How many thousand years old? Have they measured or tried to figure, you know, when that was built?
Well, let's put it this way: it's from 200 BC to 900 AD.
Okay.
That's the time that they flourished there. So we like to say about 2,000 years old, thereabout.
Interesting. Do you have, is there a Mayan descended, I guess, what you say, ethnic group or culture? Are there Mayan, are there folks that still claim to be Mayan in Belize now?
Oh, yeah. We have actually three different ethnic group of Mayan people here. We have the Mopan Maya, we have the Quechi Maya, and we have the Yucatec Maya. The Yucatec are the ones we always say they come in from Mexico. They settle in the northern part of our country. But okay. The Mopan and the Quechi Maya, the Quechi, they're the ones that we believe they were the original ones, the ones that used to inhabit these archaeological sites around the country. Remember at one time we had up to like a million population here of Mayan people. And the Mayans were here flourishing.
Yeah.
But now the population of the Mayan people, they only represent about 12% of our population.
Hey, listen, I didn't even know you had 12%. I mean, that's fascinating. So what caused the destruction of the Mayans? If it's 900 BC, that was before the Spanish came and messed up most of the rest of Central and South America. So what happened to the Mayans? I'm just curious.
Well, they had several theories as to what caused their disappearance.
Well,
not totally disappear, but they just, you know, they had some problems with the area. They could no longer sustain their crops and their farming. You know, that was their main way of life, and so that caused them to start leaving to other areas. Mm-hmm. That's one theory. And Greg, I haven't been doing those tours for, I tell you what, it's been over a year and a half. I haven't been to the Mayan tour, Altunha. I haven't been there for a year and a half. I've been just
I'm scratching your memory here. I'm inspiring.
Yeah,
And that's the thing about tour. Yeah, well, good. You know, it's kind of fun. It's amazing how, you know, you probably don't realize how much information you have in your head. You know, when I used to do my tours in San Francisco, and I did the duck tours, I drove those right into San Francisco Bay. It was kind of funny. And I drove these motorized cable cars. And so Alan and I are both tour guides. So, you know, we can chat about this stuff. It's kind of fun. You can compare notes. But tourists are a kick. But you build up this amount of information. Well, here, let me ask you another question too. In fact, we have more time. If you have more time, I have more time. So I'm really glad to have you on here. But I remember in the latter stages of my tour career, as I was ending it and getting ready to go into radio, which is what I really wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
Tour guiding, I just kind of did by accident. It's kind of funny. 8 years of accident. You know,
really? Anyway.
I needed a job. You know, I got fired from one place, and I was walking down Fisherman's Wharf, and I saw this duck, and I thought, oh, maybe I could drive that. You know, and I was hired by then I thought, I'll just keep walking. Then I found another duck company, and they offered me a ride and a tour, and I said, okay, well, give this a shot.
Cool.
So, and this is Ride the Ducks. This is Ride the Ducks San Francisco, and these are the big white ones with the sound thing on board and the little quackers and the whole bit. And I really needed a job, right?
He did.
So I was hired that day, so I was out of work for like 2 days. Just walking down the wharf, you know. And then 8 years later, I'm still doing it, right? But the problem at the end of it was, and I don't know if you find this too, that the kids, the 12-year-olds, you know, with their apps, you know, there's so many tours now that you can do, that people can do, they have an app for it. And so they just take their cell phone and walk around, and it's got a little built-in compass, and off they go, and they think they're really smart. That I think the tour guide industry, I think it's probably in decline right now simply because there's so many self-guided app tours and people, and they have these hop-on, hop-off buses, and you know, the hop-on, hop-off bus is really into tours. So being a tour guide, they don't, the information isn't respected. The amount of information we have is not respected as much simply because people have access to it on their cell phones now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Tell me some of your experience. I'm curious. I'm curious what you think.
You know what? I've would take out 2020. This would have put me at 18 years, right? This would have put me at 18 years as a tour guide.
Wow.
And so 17 without 2020, right? I did just one tour in 2020.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah. One Alton Hat tour. That's Alton Hat tour I'm talking about. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I try to make it interesting. Every single day, you try to change up things to make it interesting, to make it, because, I mean, what we were taught as tour guide before we start doing tour guiding, that we are ambassadors to your country. You know, uh-huh. you want to represent the country in the best light perspective ever. You want to give the best representation, right? So I try to always put on my best so that I can be not only a tour guide educating people about the flora, the fauna, the, you know, natural history, archaeology, you name it, but you want to also be an entertainer, right? Not only education.
Oh, yeah. I had that part down. That was the easy part for me.
That's right, yeah. So by the time everyone would be finished with one of my tours, people would say, my goodness, we're done now, and we have to leave, you know. And now we feel like closer than ever, like we've known you for years.
Yeah, your
That's
friends.
That's the impression you made on us.
Yeah, in 4 hours, it's amazing when you're with people intensely, or 5 hours, or however long, or 3 hours, whatever your tour is, you really
yeah.
become friends with people, and they remember you. And I told, here's the
right.
funny part, though. I told my the folks that are on my tours, I said, one day I'm going to be a world-famous talk show host, and you can say, I took a tour with that guy. You know, and we're on our way here.
Oh,
and,
really?
Oh, yeah, I'm really curious to see if someone calls in. Yeah, I was on your duck tour. I'm from, Wichita, Kansas, and I had a great time on your tour. You're one hell of a tour guy there, pal. I really like your talk show. You know, I mean, this is going to happen with it. And just to let folks know, Alan Dawson is a supremely, you know, excellent tour guide. He's marvelous at what he does. He is. He's exactly what he says. He's entertaining, and he knows just tons. Well, he used to anyway, not just these of you. But it's fascinating, you know, the wealth of information you had. And of course, you know me; I'm a fellow tour guide, so I'm going to ask you the tough questions. And he knows; he just knows stuff. Now, did you have to be certified by the government of Belize to do this, or did you just get hired on in a company? Is
oh,
a certification process?
We got to be trained. Yeah, we have
okay.
a certification process that we need to go through. You need to study 166 hours in class.
Oh, wow!
And then after the 6 hours in class, you need to get out, be familiar uh-huh. with these different parts of the country that you'll be touring and talking about and educating people about,
uh-huh.
and familiarize yourself with these sites so that when the actual day comes, you know, you're going to be going on trips with professional guides that's been guides for a few years already. They're
uh-huh.
going to have you do a little portion of that tour, and they're going to
okay.
grade you on that tour, and you have three of these trips that you have to go on. And
uh-huh.
then after that, if you grade high, you get checked out as a tour guide. Then you can go in and pay your fees to the Belize Tourism Board, and then
mm-hmm.
you get your license. So, yeah, it's like a two-month process.
Interesting. Do you get rechecked every so often? Do they evaluate your tours to make sure that you're still consistent? Or once you have your license, is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, every 2 years or so, we have to be, recertified, rechecked. We do some little tests. And also we do the CPR first aid training too. So every year we need to do a refresher course, and we need to present a yearly, the identification card when we're doing our relicensing, when you're doing your renewal every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
So they keep us.
I was certified when I was a tour guide. It wasn't required because we could, you know, on land, we could get to an ambulance within like 2 minutes, you know, of a call.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So they figured that was sufficient. But you're on the countryside, you know, you don't just call 911 and someone shows up. It doesn't quite work that way. So that's essential. And I had to do a Heimlich maneuver back in college. You know, when we first learned about it, I actually ended up doing it for a fellow student who was
really?
Choking on some beef. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was very grateful. And I was, this is kind of intriguing, you know, because I was sitting at dinner with a friend of mine. And my friend, you know, looking across, gets this really, you know, pale look on his face, like something's really wrong. I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I look behind
wow.
me, and there's a guy who's like turning red. And I'm like, oh, I know what this is. You know, he's like grabbing his throat and the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oh, he's choking on something. So I immediately got him up. And he's big. This is like football player. This is a big guy, right? So I grabbed him around
wow.
around the stomach as hard as I could. And I just yanked. And then I had to yank again. I did two of them, right?
And all of a sudden, you know, wow. Beef pops out and he's like, you know, color returns to his face and he sits down and, you know, of course he's thanking me profusely.
Wow.
It's like, you know, dude, it's okay. You know, it's this is what people do. You know, to me, it's just, this is what you're supposed to do, you know? And so, I want to get CPR certified again because you never know. I mean, everybody should be CPR certified.
It's good. It's good to have it. Yeah. You never know when you have a case that you have to deal with and you'll be able to help that individual, bring them back to life. You know, like this guy that you helped with the choking. I've never had any serious case, thank goodness, on none of my tours over the years. Only had like two different pass outs, people pass out. And of course,
what, you bored them to death
procedure.
Or what? Did you bore them to death? I'm teasing. Yeah. Yes, Alan Dawson,
so
most boring tour guide in Belize. Yeah.
You know what I was, before I came on, I was thinking, Greg. And right away, my mind went to when you were doing the doc tours and you told me the doc tours about it on the trip coming back from Alton, how you were telling me what it was all about. So I was like laughing before I came online here about you on those doc tours.
Well, you know, it's a crazy way to make a living. You know, it's like, how do you explain? What do you do? You know, most people say, well, I'm an accountant, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm an engineer. I run an office, I do this, you know, I do duck tours. People go, huh? What's a duck? Well, it's a World War II landing. It's a World War II landing craft turned into a tourist vehicle, and it drives on land and it drives in the water. Oh, that's interesting. And you can make
life
a living at that?
Right,
why,
right?
Yes, I could, actually. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alan. What were you going to say?
Life is interesting, I said, right?
Well, tour guide, people don't realize. So, I mean, at least it used to be. Like I say, I think the apps, you know, and modern technology are going to take away a really fun job. You know, I wouldn't want to make it a lifetime career because I really always wanted to get into radio. And actually, my tour guide experience, I was on a microphone for 8 years, you know, 5-6 hours a day working, you know, these 10-11 hour days. And so you get that time behind a microphone, you get really comfortable doing it. You know, as you know, you're always nervous your first time, but, you know, after a while it becomes second nature. You just like talking to people and then you start including them in and, you know, the questions I always found was the best part of the tour. Giving the information I had to, because that was our basic requirement, but what was always the most interesting to me about tour guiding were the questions. And the duck tours, that was more entertainment. We did some crazy things. We did this, we got a little background noise there. I hear the birdies. I like the birdies in the background. That's good. But, anything else in the background we're going to pick up here?
You got birds in your background? Or you?
No, you do. I'm in the birds in your background, yeah. So come to Belize, listen to the birdies. I love the birdies in the background. Are you kidding? That's great. I wish I had birds in my back. I have to play recording. I could, you know, we're kind of closed up here, but yeah. But the questions, people ask the most amazing questions, and that's where you really get to stretch as a tour guide. You really get to sort of reach into your knowledge because a lot of times they'll ask you things that you haven't a clue about, but you try and kind of reason through, well, if this makes sense and this makes sense, and you know, maybe you can get to their answer. Do you remember being stumped by anybody who asked you just an impossible question?
What kind of question?
Well, did anybody ask you something that was so outlandish there was no way to know it, or did you send them to Google at that point? Because I don't remember, I can't think of anything. I got some questions that, you know, were just weird. I mean, really weird, like, huh?
It's interesting, but I was able to answer most people's questions. I think it was just maybe one, two people that, two different individuals on different tours that I just didn't have the answer. And I had to tell them, I'm sorry, I just don't know. I got to research it.
Yeah. At least that shows you're honest, too. Hey, listen, I'm going to let you go in a couple of minutes, but I want to make sure we do just a couple things. First of all, what can people do in Belize? Then, of course, any contact information, your company, your tour company, any information you want to give on how to reach you, Facebook pages, things like that. But if for someone that wants to go to Belize, what are some of the really cool things you can do there now?
All right. Well, I tell you what, usually whenever it's your winter, North Americans, they flock down to Belize from November through to April. So here's some of the activities that you can look forward to do if you ever come to Belize on a cruise ship or you fly in through the airport. You can do cave tubing, floating down the tube, floating down the Laser River on an inner tube and going through some cool cave system. Seeing stalactites, stalagmites.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's one activity that a lot of people do when they come.
Yeah.
You can do hikes, you can do biking, you can do zip lining through this forest. You can do horseback riding, visit archaeological sites. the Belize Zoo. You can go out country to see the black howler monkeys in their natural habitat. I mean, a lot of these things are, I mean, most of these things, they're all in the natural habitat in the jungle of Belize. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so those are just some of the many, many activities you can do if you decide to come to Belize this winter. Running away from your winter, I'm saying.
Right? Well, how about summertime? Is it less expensive? Do you have a tourist industry in what would be, you know, your, well, let me see. No, you're still Northern Hemisphere, so it's still winter, you know, but our summer, is it too hot in Belize in the summertime? Is it just not comfortable for people to be there? I mean, winter was fine.
It's too hot. Yeah, it's too hot. It's too hot for a lot of people. A lot of people come here and, oh, yeah, it's too hot for them. I mean, you're talking about 90 degrees, 92 degrees, and you're talking about 89, 90% humidity. So you're not dripping with sweat, but you're pouring with sweat. So lots of liquid. And a lot of drinking, a lot of liquid. Drink juice, drink water. We provide water on most of the tours, you know. But, yeah, people still come during the summer months, but not as, I mean, the cruise ship usually... when cruise ship was booming here, that's the time when you see them less here. They come year round, but you see them less. When you get like 40 ships for the month, you'll be seeing like 12, 14 ships for the month around that time of the year.
Right.
That's I'm talking about May through to October. Those are the months that people stay away from here. Yeah, they go to other parts of the world on cruise ships. But it's hot, but, you know, people still think that it's interesting to come, and they still come. And like I said, prior to COVID, I mean, this place was booming with tourism. Booming.
Well, like I say, I would like to, especially when I get my own plane. I'm looking at a Viper Jet Mark II. It's going to cost me about $1 million, you know. But, you know, I intend to be really successful at this, besides the fact that we're going to change, you know, the relationship between the citizen and the government through citizen legislation. So we're going to be – this is going to be, I hope, an international phenomenon of good works where we help people out around the world, teaching them how to write their own laws, you know, for their various legislatures. In fact, if you ever want to get into that, if you want to, you know, write a bill on the tourist laws, I can work with you, and we can. I have another friend in Belize too, so hopefully we'll get some more Belize listeners. So share the show. It's going to be a podcast about an hour and 15 minutes from now. So what's 9:05 my time? It's going to be 8:05 your time. So you'll be able to get the podcast, and the same link that that gets you to the show also gets you to the podcast. And so, and you can always get, you know, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. That's our main website. That always lists the shows in order. It's either the show that I'm about to do, the show that's going on right now, if you go to the website, or once it's podcast, it'll be the show that I've just done. And so you can scroll through the other ones and see what's happening. But I want to come down. I'd love to broadcast for a week in Belize. You know, you get sick of me, but, you know, it'd be fun. We'd have a great time. And just to be able to, and then you can introduce me. What's that? I'm sorry, Alan. Go ahead.
I said, no, I will never get sick of you, buddy. It'll be cool.
Well, thank you very much.
For a little bit.
This is why this guy's my friend. Okay. He's the coolest dude, I'll tell you. But we could bring on Belize, you know, celebrities, maybe the mayor of Belize City. You know, we could actually arrange this ahead of time for various people that wanted to, especially if I'm like, you know, big celebrity in that time, you know, but we'll see anyway. But I would come down anyway. Now, how do people, can you drive there through Mexico, or is that like ridiculous? Is it better just to book a commercial airline and fly down?
Yeah. The best thing right now is just jump on one of them U.S. airline. That would be Delta, American, and United. That's flying here right now. Southwest was here. They were supposed to start again in September, but so far I haven't seen them yet. But Southwest was doing pretty good. They were bringing like 3 to 5 flights here weekly. Yeah, they were doing good. Yeah, Southwest was booming when just before COVID. But yeah, people drive through Mexico, but it's not a thing like in the past. Not like in the past. You don't find people driving through Mexico from the U.S. The only people who are doing that right now, they're car dealers. Car dealers are still driving through Mexico, bringing cars down, mark up the price, and yeah, that's how they live. Car dealers are bringing vehicles through Mexico still.
That's how you get your vehicles? So what's popular? Do you have, is it U.S. makes, or is it European makes, or Japanese makes? What are y'all driving? I'm curious about.
We have them all here. We have them all here. I'm driving a Toyota Camry now. I used to drive a Ford Explorer that my late wife and I, we drove it down from Alabama to Belize. We had it for 7 years. After her passing, I sold it.
I'm sorry about that.
It was just tied up with too much memories.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I got
yeah.
me a little Toyota Camry.
Okay, Toyotas are great. I had a Toyota Tahoe that I got in San Francisco, and I brought it out here, and it had 424,000 miles on it when it finally gave up. So I want to get another one. I'm not kidding. No, we had the engine rebuilt at 316,000.
Greg.
Yeah.
Greg, what year was that car?
1987.
Greg, let me tell you the year that I have. I have a 1999 with 235,302 right now.
So it's about halfway.
It works
about halfway
like
through its operating lifespan. Keep going, dude. You know, and again,
get rid of it.
No, why should you? Especially your climate, though. You don't have a winter. You don't have the really destructive stuff. You don't have, unless you're near the ocean, you're not going to get the salt air. It's not going to corrode it. So yeah, there's nothing wrong. In fact, the older cars, I think, are better. You know, in many respects, my favorite. Well, I have what I call my old man car. I have an Impala now. It's really boring. It's had all kinds of mechanical issues.
That's cool.
No,
I love
Impalas.
Come on.
Yeah, it's an old man car. I'm not an old man yet.
I'm an old man.
Oh, okay, fine. I probably got 20 years on you. But we'll see. But it's all attitude. No, I want a sports car. I mean, I want to drive fast and you know, top down, yelling yeehaw out the window. I mean, you know, I never grew up, and it's much more fun that way.
That's interesting. You are still interesting as ever. I'm 48.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to be 49. I'm going to be 49 in February.
I'll tell you, I don't reveal this often. I just turned 62.
No kidding.
I'm not. You know, like I say, I don't talk about it often because I don't like to give my age exactly. But yeah. I can retire now, but I don't want to because I'm having too much fun. I finally found a job I like, you know, action radio.
So,
I told you I had about 20 years on you. Well, not quite, but, you know. Yeah, I got about 14. Yeah, we have 14 years on you.
Yeah.
You're just a youngin'. What?
But you know the reality of it, though? I still feel 25. I feel 25.
Yeah. Me too. Hey, listen, I went bike riding 10 miles the other day. I was in the gym yesterday. You know, like I say, I'm losing weight, so I'm getting healthier. And it's all attitude. Well, genetics, too. I mean, there's a certain predisposition.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's so much that you can do just for yourself. And if you
can't,
the worst thing you can do is retire. Retired people die. I mean, they just do. Retirement is probably the biggest cause of death there is. But if you can keep vibrant, keep excited, you know, the people that are like in their 90s, they're still working.
Uh-huh.
You know, or at least they're volunteering or they're doing something that they really love doing. So I hope you get back into tour guiding or you find some passion that really inspires you, you know, that you can that you can do. And of course, you know, we'll be talking more now. We've covered more ground than we're going to on most of our visits. I think probably half an hour just because I'll have a busier time. We had our regular person at this time wasn't able to make it. And so Derek Park does our financial report. So you're welcome always to call in and just, you know, listen to other reports, participate if you want.
Okay.
You know, if you have questions, especially for Derek, because he's really good. He's a financial advisor for Edward Jones. And so he comes on. And then we have our gun report. In fact, Jim Dykes is going to be on in a few minutes doing our Second Amendment report. Now, okay, let me ask you the nasty question. Can you own guns in Belize?
Sure. Of course you can.
Okay, good. I don't know. There's no course about it. Most of the world can't do it. So I'm just curious.
You can
own
guns.
Yeah. Okay.
Just got to go through the procedure to get it, right? To get the license.
Okay. Can you carry them? Can regular citizens carry guns?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be cool.
Matter of fact, I think that's one of the problems on the south side right now, that gun. Now, of course, when you look at the gang situation here, it's not the, you know, the gangs carrying those guns, they're the illegal weapons, right?
Well, of course.
How do they get them? I mean, how do they get these type of weapon in their gang group, you know?
Smugglers.
Man, a huge...
Mexican cartels.
Yeah.
I mean, the weapons are the easy access. But the problem is if regular citizens are armed, I mean, the criminals are going to be armed anyway. So the only way to really defeat the criminals is to have armed citizens so that no matter what they try to do, they're not going to get very far. And so that's the big difference. But, yeah, maybe I'll fly down with my guns and I'll, you know, I don't know if you have open carry or not, but we'll talk about that. But you can't have that. So it's got to be concealed.
You I don't think they'll let you in with a gun. You can't come in with a gun.
Oh, okay. Well, then I won't.
You can't come in with your gun.
Yeah. Okay. But we should explore that further in different chats during the week, the whole situation.
Sure.
And like I say, we you know, listen to our gun report. Maybe there's something of interest to your fellow Belizeans. You know, as that's what's going on. But yeah, let me let you go this time. And but if you want to see, do you want to stick around and listen to the next report, or do you have to go? I'm sure you have, you know.
I haven't had my coffee yet, so I'll have to let go to go get my coffee. But
okay, well, just listen live.
I'm talking
then.
With you here without coffee.
Oh no, my
but
goodness!
I'll,
and you're so coherent and lucid.
Yeah, usually that's the first thing in the morning, buddy. Go brew that.
Well, drink
coffee.
Your coffee before next week's show.
Oh, definitely.
Well, yeah. Well, when you hang up, just. Oh, well, thank you. I'm so glad you're going to be part of the show now. I'm really happy. I do want to come visit, and I'm serious about spending a week there and broadcasting from Belize, you know, a week, you know, once a year, spending a week down there. You can listen to the show because we're still live. So once you hang up, just go to the regular website, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, and then you'll just be able to listen to our next reports as they come in. Alan, thank you so much for calling. Yeah, thank you so much. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you so much, Greg. Yeah, it was so nice to be with you for a little bit. Have a good day now.
And what's the name of your company before you go? What's the name of the company? Big plug here.
The company that I work for right now, Calypso Train Tours.
Okay.
Calypso Train Tours. Yeah. So you want to just, you know.
Website, Facebook?
I don't have a website for them. Sorry, Greg.
Get it next time. That's
because,
okay. We're a work in progress. We can, you know. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
I just wanted to put out there that, you know, if anybody just want to come and just don't want to go far, just stay in the city, do an hour around the city on a trolley, open trolley ride, that's with Calypso Train Tours. And you just might get Alan Dawson for your tour guide.
No, request Alan Dawson as your tour guide. Alan, who is now Action Radio's correspondent in Belize. We got to get you a really good tagline. You know, say something like, "This is Alan Dawson reporting for Action Radio from Belize City, Belize." You know, can you just say it?
Yeah,
say
there you go.
Go ahead. Give me a tagline. Give me one of those like journalistic taglines.
So, thank you so much for listening. This is Alan Dawson reporting with Action Radio out of Belize in Central America.
And another round of applause. All right, Alan. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, sir. Take care, Greg.
All right. Take care. There we go. Bye. Wow. Bye now. That was way too much fun. Actually, Jim's on the line right now, too. So we're going to transition immediately to wait, you have to hang up. Otherwise, we still hear you.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Get out of here. Well, unless you want to listen. Okay, right. Let me play Jim's theme. And there we go. That was way too – I'll explain to Jim what that was all about just a second. Let's get his theme, and we'll be right back. Out of the forests of Virginia to the swamps of southern Florida – comes a great man who carries a big gun, probably a Desert Eagle 50 caliber. He served our nation in the military. He protected the citizenry in law enforcement. And now he is a director of Florida Carry, trying to make the Second Amendment, as written, a reality for all Americans. He is Jim Dice with the Second Amendment Report for Action Radio. Well, you can make yourself live, but I'm going to do it anyway. Hopefully this is all working out. We just had the most fascinating chat with a very good friend of mine who I just kind of like lost contact with for way, way, way too long. So Alan Dawson's a new correspondent from Belize. And so he was just on. So if you want to catch the previous hour on podcast, anybody wants to listen to it, it was fascinating. And before that, I played our last Matt Gaetz interview from 2018. And it was sort of like, you know, where are you now? If you want some ideas, dude, this is the place to call in. But anyway, so it's been a busy morning. And then we had Jane Addams with our medical freedom report, talking about all the latest, you know, ways to get out of the mandates, you know, mask and especially the COVID vaccine mandate. So again, a busy morning. Jim, how are you?
I am doing well, sir. Busy mornings are good mornings, though.
Oh, no kidding. Well, we're getting busier. You know, I thought when I went to 3 hours, I'd have all this extra time. Wrong. I get all these extra people. It's really kind of cool.
What's about nature
in a vacuum? You heard that the nature abhors a vacuum, so things get filled. So, of course, we get more and more people, and we're going to get more and more gun people. And it's very, very cool. So what's going on in gun world? What's going on in your world, Florida Carry world, Second Amendment world? What horrible case are you going to torture me with today?
Hopefully I'm not going to torture you with too many horrible cases today. Today will be more of a good news kind of day. So I know you like those every once in a while.
I do like good news. Yeah. Well, actually, I've had a marvelous Friday. Friday's the day we should do good news anyway, except for the things we have to talk about. Your mic is incredibly clear. So whatever internet issues you may have had, there's nothing today. It sounds absolutely crystal clear. So that's
great.
Good.
I just closed down a bunch of windows this time and decided that I would give this a try and see if this works. So I think it might be more a computer processor than an internet issue, but that's okay.
Yeah,
we've got to fix
new computer. New computer, more capacity. Yeah. I've got this beautiful iMac that just has gobs of capacity because I have to have like 20 windows open because I never know when nobody's going to call in and I'm stuck, you know, for 3 hours myself talking. So, you know, that's why I have all the windows. Okay, well, good. Well, everything's working. So for folks that want to do radio your own, close the windows. You know, just make your computer – don't make your computer work harder than it has to, and good things will happen to you. Do we have a gun of the week? Oh, so wait, we have
we
a gun.
We do. We have a gun of the week.
All right.
As promised, we have a gun of the week. So
okay.
The gun of the week this week is the Ruger Precision Rifle.
Oh.
So, and I chose this because we've talked a little bit about long-range shooting and precision rifles, and I've become a little more interested in really long-range precision rifle shooting. And The Ruger Precision Rifle is interesting because it opened an entire new category of precision rifles. So this was the one that really broke the $2,000 barrier. So before the precision rifle from Ruger was introduced, for the most part, if you wanted to reach out at long distance, say 1,000 yards, you are going to be over $2,000 guaranteed on the rifle that you were going to use if you wanted anything that was going to reasonably allow you to reach out and accurately touch something at those distances. Mm-hmm. And then Ruger came along with the precision rifle. And when it was introduced, and I believe it was in 2015 that they introduced the precision rifle, it came in and was right around $1,200, which was incredible, and was offering sub MOA groups. And in most cases, right out of the box, it was offering groups at about a half MOA.
Ooh. We should explain that for folks that are not as technical, and for Alan who's listening to Belize now. But
sure.
MOA,
so,
just give a quick, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so MOA is a minute of angle, and it basically is a term that's used to describe the accuracy of a particular rifle. And for very, very rough calculations, you can think about a minute of angle as having a variation in the strike of your rounds of about 1 inch at 100 yards. So then 2 inches at 200 yards and so on all the way out, because if you think about it, the accuracy as you go further and further out, that accuracy number is going to continue to increase because it's basically a cone of accuracy that's going out.
Well, it's an angle. People, when we say minute of angle, the word you want to focus in on is angle. And a minute, if I remember, I think we did this before, that a degree, there's 360 degrees in a circle. And in latitude or longitude, I think both of them, a minute is there are 60 minutes to a degree and there's 60 seconds to a minute. So you can find any point on Earth with degrees, minutes, and seconds within, like, you know, 2 feet or whatever it is. It's pretty accurate. So a minute of angle is, if just imagine a degree going out from a circle, you know, it's going to be 60 times wider than a minute. So a minute going out at an inch at 100 yards and 2 inches at 200 yards is the same measurement. It's that same angle. The angle hasn't changed, so the accuracy hasn't changed. What's changed is the distance. And the further you get from the point of where you take the shot, the further you go, that cone expands naturally because, you know, as you make a bigger circle, those 360 degrees, those degrees get bigger, therefore the minutes get bigger, and that's kind of how it works. So you're not losing accuracy at 200 yards getting 2 inches. It's just as accurate as it is as 100 yards. And of course, that would be 10 inches at 1,000 yards, you know, which is amazing to think that a rifle can shoot, you know, a minute of angle. Have I got the right 10 inches at 1,000 yards? That'd be right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So half a minute angle is 5 inches at 1,000 yards. In other words, you know, you're talking center mass if you're a military sniper. Because police snipers, they don't take 1,000-yard shots. That would be completely irresponsible. But for military snipers to be able to have a gun that's accurate enough to hit within 5 inches at 1,000 yards is an amazing asset to our soldiers and you know, folks in combat. Did you ever have sniper training? You don't have to tell me if it's like
I did not,
but
no.
I'm just curious. Okay, all right. Have you done long-range competitive rifle?
I have not done competitive long-range rifle. I've done recreational long-range rifle.
how long range? Let's get to the
And again, this is very relative. So the longest range I've shot is 800 meters.
Okay. 308?
308, 300 Win Mag, some 338 Lapua.
Oh, you get the heavy calibers. You must be like a big guy or something with a big shoulder, because those things are like monster calibers. For those of you, we should talk about this too. For those of you who want to go on the long range shooting, and I used to compete at 1,000 yards, the biggest round I shot was a 30-06 because I had a Savage 110, which again is very, you know, as long range competitive rifles go, was what I could afford. And I had a Shepherd scope. And Shepherd to me is the best because it does automatic range finding out to 1,000 yards. So it simplifies half your calculations. You've got drop because the bullet drops, and you've got windage. Now, windage was the hard part for me because I had the bullet drop. I just put the 1,000-yard circle on the target and fired, and it would hit, except for the windage, I would hit. But you start getting these bigger calibers. People think that a bigger caliber is going to be generally a faster, heavier bullet. It's going to be a flatter trajectory. And all these things are true. But what they don't tell you is it's going to beat the crap out of your shoulder. So how many 308s can you shoot versus how many 300 Win Mags versus how many 338 Lapuas?
Just out of curiosity. Obviously, a 308 is going to feel lighter than a 300 Win Mag, which to me felt significantly lighter than a 338 Lapua. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, which surprised me. May have been, you know, a factor of different rifles as well, because they weren't all fired out of the same model rifle. But it's interesting. And the other thing people need to understand when you talk about, you know, accuracy and minutes of angle, when we talk about this, this assumes that you have perfect form when you're shooting. So this is what you would expect if a rifle were clamped into a bench rest and there was no outside influence placed on it when you were shooting. So it assumes that you have pretty perfect form. You also have to remember that this is only talking about the spread of the rounds when they hit the target. When you're shooting at long range, as you mentioned, you're going to have windage and bullet drop. So unless you're good at calculating those things, you know, you could be very, very accurate very, very accurate without being precise. So your rounds could be, you know, very, very tight in a group and 10 inches, 12 inches, 15 inches off target if you're not good at doing your range calculations to make adjustments to your optic that you're using. So
that was my problem. I had, you know, fairly decent groups, you know, on the right side of the target, you know, 1,000 yards. Well, I love talking about this because this is something I think anybody who's interested in shooting should try, because it's fascinating, because so many things can happen, you know, and so, you know, your gun might be able to shoot, you know, 5 inches at 1,000 yards, but chances are you're not. and that was me, you know, because my body's weird. It doesn't line up easily for a prone position for a rifle shooting. That's probably why I do more pistol shooting, because ergonomically, you know, the way God threw me together is kind of like a joke. Certain things I can't do. And so I can't line up. My head's too big. My neck's too long. It just doesn't lend itself well to shooting a rifle in a prone position. So my biggest problem, you know, shooting long range is me. I mean, the gun was great. You know, Shepherd scope tells you exactly where 1,000 yards is. I had the bullet drop calculated for my 30-06, and you know, as long as I could do my job, you know, the gun would do its job, and I would be, you know, and sometimes I just forgot the windage and just shot, and I was still within maybe a foot either side of the target, which at 1,000 yards is pretty damn good because I had the windage. Now, there's something that people used to use. I don't know if they still do it in the military, because now everything's probably laser range finding and automatic bullet compensation and, you know, temperature, humidity, Coriolis effect and everything, and they have these little computers. But there used to be something called MilDots. And MilDots, I have never understood. But you've got to calculate, and you've got to do all these clicks on your sight, and it looks the same at 1,000 yards as 100, and people spend years learning how to use a MilDot scope. Have you ever had the privilege of trying to decipher MilDots?
I have played with MilDots a little bit, but yeah, the military still uses, for the most part, MilDot reticles. And I don't know that necessarily one is better than the other. Because people who use MOA swear by MOA, and people who use MilDot swear by MilDot.
And
like you said, Yeah. Right. And like you said, there's a lot of ballistic calculators out there now where you can use a Kestrel, which is a small handheld device that measures things like wind speed, wind direction, temperature, humidity, various things like that. And it will actually connect by Bluetooth to a ballistic app on your phone where you can have plugged in the rifle that you have and the characteristics of the particular round that you're firing. It'll spit out to you at whatever range you're shooting the correct adjustments for both windage and elevation. So it makes it a lot easier, a lot less math intensive, a lot less having to keep a history of how particular rounds performed under various conditions to go back and refer to those. So it does make things much easier for you now.
Have they connected those to, I guess, what I would call an active scope as opposed to a passive one you just looked through, where the crosshairs will automatically adjust to the app calculations, or is that still in the future?
So they have not, as I understand it, the military is working on a scope that does precisely that, where it goes in and makes automatic adjustments for you. I have not seen any of those actually on the market. If someone out there knows of them, please let me know and we'll correct that. But I have not seen any. And if they're out there, I'm sure they are.
I don't think you're going to. I don't think you'll see something like that for a while. I can just see the left. They've got a scope that automatically adjusts so you can kill people. You know what's going to happen. We can say right now. Actually, Gene's something like, Gene, can you take a look and see if you can find an electronically active rifle scope? This would be pretty new for Gene. She's not a gun aficionado yet. We're going to work on that too. But Gene, if you have a minute to look up automatically adjusting rifle scopes, based on apps, that would be fascinating to find out. Like I said, I just guess that I have no idea, but it made sense to me that that's the next place to go. And so especially for a combat soldier that, has to go into a horrible situation that doesn't have a ton of training or doesn't have time for training. It's like, the British and when the Germans were about to fly over in the Battle of Britain, those guys had 6, 7, 8 hours training in a Spitfire or a Hurricane. It's not a long time. And yet they had to do it because that was what was required. So if a soldier can lessen the time. Go ahead, Jim.
You want automatic adjusting rifle scopes?
Yeah, Jim, what would you call that? So Gene can look it up.
That's probably as good as any. I don't know how you'd word that to get it. I don't think you're going to find any out there, but
yeah.
Here it says that there's a Triagicon CCAS auto adjusting rifle scope.
Oh, read some features. Let's see what it does. Not trying to give him a plug. We'll have to call him up and say, hey, we plugged your scope. No, go ahead. What does it say it does?
Hold on.
Yeah, does it connect to an app? See the fun we can
Hold
have
on.
Here, Jim? Yeah. Well, if you can't get it, you always drop back.
Oh, gosh. Let's see. Yeah.
Well, you don't have to rush. Just ping the hotel bell if you want to take a minute. And, yeah.
It says it appears to be approximately the size of a minivan. That don't make
a
any
minivan?
Sense.
Minivan? No, something's wrong. that's a little inconvenient to carry around.
It says it's designed to support a multitude of weapons systems ranging from vehicle-mounted machine guns, infantry weapons, to sniper rifles.
This sounds like a military weapon. It doesn't sound like a civilian kind of thing.
Yeah, this sounds an awful lot like there are systems that I know are out there, and I won't talk too much about them because I don't want to get into things that might be classified. But I know, for example, the Israelis have used a similar technology where they had a large scope system like that that had its own ballistic calculators built into it and then was attached to a machine gun at a different location that would then allow it to be automatically traverse left, right, up and down to get on target.
I saw that movie with Mark Wahlberg, a shooter. Yeah, I saw that one. Some guy fired from a minivan. Oh, that's so that, or was that the right film? Maybe I'm thinking of something different.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen it.
So. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I'm just yeah. All right.
This article says there's two autofocus rifle scopes, passive and active.
Oh. Okay.
Let's
do some research. I don't want to take up Jim's time on this right now, but just for the fun of it, Jim, if you get a chance to research next week, and Gene, you too, active rifle scopes, because this would be interesting. But the rifle itself, so the Ruger, this is where we started this conversation. It's the Ruger Precision Rifle. Ruger is famous. Gene, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Ruger is famous for making guns that are, you know, like the pickup trucks. You know, they're useful. They do their job. There are no frills. They don't have a bunch of stuff on them that you don't need, but they're incredibly overbuilt. Like I have a Ruger GP100 6-inch barrel 357 Magnum. That thing's never going to have a problem. It's not indestructible, but it's probably the next best thing. And I can shoot all the 357 I want through that. And I frequently shoot it at 100 yards, you know, off a bench, and I can keep about, you know, within like a 12, 14-inch circle at 100 yards with a handgun just by holding it steady. You know, so the guns are capable of incredible accuracy that people don't expect. But Ruger, they're great for building really strong, really, you know, stuff that you need, but not stuff that you don't need.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, some of the interesting things about this particular rifle, it comes in a variety of calibers. So, you know, you have a lot of choices out there. So it comes in a 6mm Creedmoor, 308, a 6.5 Creedmoor, 6.5 PRC, 338 Lapua, 300 Win Mag, and 300 PRC. It used to come in a 223.556, but I don't see that on the Ruger website anymore. So I'm wondering if they discontinued their 5.56 223 version of the precision rifle. But it has a very nice factory trigger. Ruger's actually been having some really good improvements on even some of their handgun triggers. You know, some of the older Ruger handguns that I fired, I really didn't like the triggers, and they felt really gritty and loose.
Yeah.
And recently their triggers on handguns have gotten much better. And the trigger on the precision rifle is really nice. It's adjustable from just over 2 pounds to 5 pounds. And you know, it feels smooth. It's just a really, really nice firing trigger. Probably the only thing that I don't like about the precision rifle, and you know, this is, you know, maybe, you know, really getting into the weeds, but you can't remove the magazine from the precision rifle unless the bolt is locked open.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. So,
did Ruger want to do that? Do you think they were kind of forced into it? Is there some pending ATF regulation on detachable magazines on rifles, or why do you think they did that?
Yeah, I'm sure that they did it as a safety measure to make sure that you couldn't remove the magazine while there was a round in the chamber. But if you're going to build something like a precision rifle, I don't want you limiting what I can do. If you're shooting a precision rifle, I feel like you're experienced enough to know that you need to make sure that the magazine or the chamber is empty. Or perhaps there might be a reason why you might want to remove the magazine with a round in the chamber. You know, maybe you know that you have chambered the last round and you want to change the magazine out. Don't want your rifle to become inoperable while you're doing it.
Yeah, there's a lot of logic in that. If you have a semi-automatic pistol, too, same thing. You may want to do a tactical reload if you have a magazine that's almost empty, but you need to run in the chamber because you're possibly holding a subject or something like that. I'm sure did they teach you this in law enforcement to change magazines from an almost empty one to a full one so that just in case, you know. But you can still leave around the chamber. You don't have to wait till the slide locks back.
Yeah, I was a law enforcement dinosaur, so. You know, back 1,000 years ago when I was working in law enforcement, we were carrying 357 wheel guns.
Oh, my.
And we were just getting ready to make the transition over to the 9mm then.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I started competing with this was for fun competition. This wasn't like ratings or you know, prize or things, but we had a thing at my local shooting range, and the fun was actually seeing how fast you could, you know, reload a revolver. And actually, you can get really good with them. And you watch, I've forgotten this guy, who's the world champion that shoots like 5 rounds in half a second. What's his name? Do you know the guy I'm talking about?
Mitchell. Don't know the guy you're talking about.
Jerry Mitchellick, I think, or something like that. Anyway, he's amazing. It sounds like one round going off. That's how fast he shoots. But if you take a revolver and you have these little speed loader things, you can actually with one hand, so you put it in your left hand, you open the action with your right hand, the revolver cylinder swings out. Don't jam it out, okay? And you hit the plunger thing with your left thumb while your right hand is drawing a speed loader. You drop it in the hands with your right hand, drop the speed loader, close the cylinder with your left hand, and you can be damn near as fast as a magazine reload with a revolver. The only problem is the revolver gets hot, so it hurts after a while, so you can't do it a whole bunch of times in a row. So you got to bring two revolvers, you know, use the cool one, you know, but that's kind of fun. It was an interesting exercise to be able to reload a revolver quickly. I found that a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Have you tried it?
So I haven't done it in the way that you said, you know, the speed loader definitely helps a lot.
Right.
But it takes a lot of practice, an awful lot of practice.
Oh yeah.
You know, getting quick with a magazine takes a lot of practice. Getting fast with a wheel gun takes significantly greater amounts of practice, in my opinion.
That's the challenge, though. So you know me. I mean, I always pick the craziest. What's going to cost me the most work? I don't know. Being a virtuoso guitar player, I'm getting better. I'm not a virtuoso, but the challenge is every time you make progress, it's kind of fun when you can unload and load a revolver. You know, and I looked up on YouTube. YouTube tells me everything, right? So I go to YouTube. I said, what's the fastest way to unload a revolver? And they have this really great thing where you push forward the cylinder release, and then you know, swing it out gently, and you hold it in your left hand. You have this weird thing with your left hand. The left thumb taps it down, and then you pop around. And it was really fun to do. And I practiced. I had these dummy plastic rounds, and I practiced this for hours just for the fun of it. And I go out to the range. That was really quick. So, you know, like I say, the fun of shooting, there's a lot of precision beyond just standing there shooting at paper. There's so many things you can do that I want to encourage people to try those different things. Okay, anyway, I've probably taken way more of your time on this than you expected. Did you?
That's all right. They're always fun. And then the other thing I'd add really quickly, just before we jump off of the Ruger, is you can still find those new at retail stores for $1,200 to $1,300. So their list prices is $18,000 to $2,000, but you can find them less expensive than that if you do some looking. So
nobody
still
pays
a very, very economic firearm.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. Okay. In fact, I just got my invitation from Alan to join us on Skype, but apparently you don't have to do that. You can just dial directly to the station. So anybody wants to join us from around the world. We have some new, actually a couple of new folks came back. The Czech Republic and Hungary are now back on the world map. China's still gone, so we're being censored by Xi Jinping. And Taiwan, he censors them too. But Russia is our number 4 destination now. So we have, you know, it's really interesting. The world map is fine, fascinating. And as the show grows and as we get more and more people, you know, involved, especially as we can start to teach the world how to become citizen legislatures, that's going to be really fun. Just imagine, you know, we talked about this the other day, you know, when Putin hears that he's got a growing citizen legislature community that wants to tell them the laws they want to be governed by. Oh, wouldn't that be fun? Vladimir, we've got a strange thing. It's a radio show from America in a place called Milton, Florida. They think they can write bills. They think they can write laws. What do you think of that? Ah, boys are boys. You know. I don't know where this is. You never know where the show goes. Obviously, China banned it. They banned Taiwan at the same time, and they're still off the map. But, yeah, Russia's number 4 behind Canada, England, Australia, and Russia. That's how our international ratings go. Isn't that wild?
That is. That's really interesting.
So, Rush, you want to call in? You know, got the Skype line. Just look at the top of our broadcast page. It's LC Live, all that, whatever that stuff is. Anyway, Alan could do it, so that's cool. All right. If you have a few extra minutes, feel free to stay because I don't think Chappie's going to be able to join us this morning. He's got a shooting match. So,
I'll probably only be able to stay about 5 extra minutes, but we can over into some 2A related stuff really quickly. So,
yes.
The first thing is a mark your calendars. for folks that are out there, because oral arguments will be heard at the Supreme Court in the New York rifle and pistol case on November 3rd.
Okay.
So that case, as we have spoken about before, is a challenge to the state of New York's May issue licensing scheme. So it's the first really big Second Amendment case that the courts are going to hear since the McDonald case. So it will be very interesting to see what happens on that. I'll be interested to tune in if I can. I probably won't be able to tune in because I'll be working, but to read the transcript just to get a feel for what kinds of questions the justices are asking, because a lot of times that kind of signals where their thinking is going.
Yeah. You know, actually listening to the oral arguments are really quite fascinating, and I wish they would broadcast those. I don't know if they do YouTubes or things. I've heard them, and I don't know if I hear them after or live. I've forgotten because it's been a while since I heard one. But the Supreme Court cases are not what you think they are. People argue before them. In fact, if you know the people that are arguing for the Second Amendment, you know, against the government, that's usually how it works. I'd be curious if there's some big name person that's actually, you know, like a famous, you know, maybe one of the Second Amendment Foundation lawyers or Guns of America lawyers, Gun Owners of America, or one of those folks. But the way they do it, it's almost like a debate. And so the questions come out of left field, you know, and they want, like anything else, like the legislature wants legislation provided for them. They kind of want the lawyers to come up with the solutions to make their job easier. And depending on what they ask, you know, it's really fascinating to listen to the leftist questions versus the conservative questions, you know, but you'd think it was like a debating class. Well, what do you think about this? And no, I don't think that's right. And, you know, round, they go back and forth. And especially when they start challenging, it's really quite fascinating. Have you had a chance to hear some of the cases, the oral arguments, Jim?
I've heard a fair amount of them. I try to read most of the cases. They publish the transcripts online. So usually I end up having to in the evenings going back and reading.
Right.
And what I'll typically do is get about halfway into a case and decide whether it's still interesting to me or not. And if it is, I'll continue reading. And if not, I jump on to the next one. But they are interesting just to see kind of the way the justices approach how they ask questions. And it's changed a lot over the years. You know, it used to be justices were fairly quiet, like Thomas is now, and the two sides made their arguments, and the justices just ruled based on the arguments that the two sides made. Now there's a lot more of individual Supreme Court justices trying to sway other justices by acting as de facto lawyers and asking questions that will lead whatever lawyer is presenting their case at that time to a particular conclusion, or helping a lawyer if they appear to be stuck by a question from the other side, and offering up in the form of a question the solution to whatever the other justice was asking. So it's kind of interesting to watch the way they do that.
Yeah. Jonathan Mosley, our legal constitutional expert, he's a criminal defense lawyer up in Virginia. He was talking about how judges sometimes will lead the lawyers. You know, don't you want to ask me about a summary judgment? Oh, yeah. Can we have a summary judgment? Why, yes. You know, bang. Right. And the gavel goes. You know, do you remember that on the Supreme Court in any cases? Like, you know, are you sure how come you haven't asked me about, you know, such and such? So do they ever lead the attorneys to get something the attorneys are obviously missing?
Yeah, they definitely will do that. Usually it's not as egregious as, you know, the example you gave, but a lot of times what will happen is, you know, for example, a conservative justice will ask a very difficult question of an attorney. The attorney will start floundering with the answer, and then a liberal justice will come in and say, well, have you considered, and then give what the appropriate answer might be, and how do you think that relates to the question?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they play these little games. Well, they're on the Supreme Court. They practice. You know, they practice in law school. They practice as lawyers. They practiced as judges. You know, and then now of course on the Supreme Court, we probably have the best, you know, BSers of all who can really slide in these different arguments. But it is fascinating. And you know, the courts, they become so biased and so political, and the cases that they're not taking, like they didn't take the election cases that they were constitutionally bound to take, particularly the Texas one. And then they do take cases and make up stuff. You know, they still think they can interpret the Constitution the way they want rather than how it's written. And they can create things, everything from Roe v. Wade to gay marriage to whatever else they're pushing that they think they can do. So the biggest problem with the court, and Jim and I have talked about this a lot, is they're getting wrong what they don't do, and they're getting wrong what they do. And they're really, you know, completely messing up. So it's interesting. I just want to interrupt for a second. We've got Bumpin' Jack, who's our live chat. Anybody wants to get on live chat, feel free. You know, wants to know where the press releases are sent. I didn't send you one. So no, this is a specific list who was on our press release list, and you're not on it. So, you know, hey, that's the way it goes. But feel free to continue on live chat. I really appreciate your commentary. All right. So I try to address live chat periodically as stuff comes
sure.
in.
Sure.
But and anybody wants to live chat too, that's a good way to get questions to us because people don't have time or they think that I'm going to yell at them because, you know, they might disagree with me. Listen to Jim. He disagrees with me all the time. He's one of my favorite reporters. So, you know, it's not a problem. Jean just blasted me earlier on Matt Gaetz. It was great. You know, she was absolutely right. You know, so it's not a problem disagreeing with me on the show. But if you want to type in, that's okay too. All right.
Well,
so,
and I would say, you know, I learn a lot more by people disagreeing with me. You know, because if you disagree with me and challenge, you know, my position, you know, it makes me go back and rethink what the position is and what the justification is. You know, if I'm in an echo chamber and everyone's just agreeing with me, then it becomes too easy. I would much rather have to go back and defend what the position is I'm taking.
Well, and the best, and you've been instrumental in modifying and changing and making me think about my views, which has been great. And this is why I always have our bills are open to public comment, because I can't think of everything. No one person can think of everything in an argument. And the beauty of the people that call in with ideas, with commentary, with suggestions, with when I'm wrong on a bill, and they will tell me, you're wrong on this bill. And I go, great, let me change that. That's thank you, appreciate it. And now we have a better bill. And so in that respect, we are very open, completely open here to, and disagreeing is not a problem. Disagreeing doesn't mean that you're against, you know, me or Jim or Gene or anybody that calls in, writes in, or comments on a bill. It just means we're trying to make it better, and you may have forgotten something, or you may have not put enough emphasis on something, or you might be just plain wrong. You know, that's true.
Right.
That happens too. And that's not, and if you're open to that, it doesn't mean that you're any less of a person or your argument is any less, but it might need some modifying and changing. And you might want to think about some things. And so that actually is a huge service. So I appreciate the people that disagree with me, you know, and have good reasons for doing so. And then I go, oh, okay, well, let me think about that. And so my views get better. My opinions get better. My the way I talk about things and the way I look at things changes based on people helping me shape my arguments too. And so one of the biggest ones that Jim and I talked about was judicial review. And it makes sense that the Supreme Court, I thought it should be left to juries and state governments initially. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, you know, and then the Supreme Court did a couple of good things. A few judges did some good things. So, well, they're the only ones doing that. So maybe I should take a look at this. And my conclusion was that they should, you know, rule if it's in their jurisdiction, if it's in Article 3 cases, that they should definitely, you know, rule for the parties involved. And if they need to declare something unconstitutional and suspend or put an injunction, do it. But what they can't do is go beyond that. They can't come up with a remedy. They can't come up with a cure. They can't come up with a regulation or a law or a court opinion that has the effect of law, because now they've exceeded their constitutional mandate. So that, I think, is a reasonable evolution to a better position than I had initially, and that's really because of Jim. So that was a good thing.
And
so
I think we both are pretty well in agreement over that position after a lot
now.
Of back and forth. And
oh, yeah.
And you know, you brought me over, you know, a little bit to your side as well. So I think it worked out well, the back and forth. Before I go, Greg, I do want to mention two quick state cases.
Okay.
Just because they're of interest to the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Yesterday, the Illinois Supreme Court declared Cook County, Illinois' tax on firearms and ammunition to be null and void.
Mm.
It was a a great decision, not made for the reasons that I'd like, although they did mention it. So the court noted that Second Amendment rights were being implicated by the tax, but decided that they did not have to go to a Second Amendment argument to rule that the law was null and void. They used a separate part of the state constitution called the Uniformity Clause that talks about how taxes have to be structured and established. So,
okay.
Well, it's a good decision. My guess is Cook County is going to go back and try to rework that same tax so that it doesn't violate the Uniformity Clause, and it's going to go right back into the court system. But at least for now.
Yeah, so they could have ruled properly on the Second Amendment, and they wouldn't have had the problem. Cook County is Chicago. This is, we're talking right. Illinois. We're talking, you know, Mayor Lightfoot, who never met a constitutional provision she agreed with and just makes stuff up. And so that's what we're talking about here. So when the courts are ruling that way, they're probably doing it so they don't get, you know, major problems from the Marxists who are now in charge of Chicago. But it's still cowardly. They should still do the right thing with the Second Amendment, because that'll you know, prevent a future case, you know, that where they are going to have to rule on the Second Amendment. And then people will argue, well, you already said this. You didn't use the Second Amendment. Why are you using it now? So they're short-term successful. Long-term, I think it's a mistake in strategy, but we'll see how it works out. Yeah.
Right. And then the second case came out of Pennsylvania. This came out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. It was a 4-3 decision, and this was on, I believe, Wednesday of this past week. Mm-hmm. And it was a suit filed against the city of Harrisburg over some local ordinance that they enacted in violation of the preemption law. So for those who haven't been listening to our show, preemption is where a state, in this case Pennsylvania, says that firearms laws, in this case, will be consistent throughout the state, and they preempt or prohibit any local jurisdiction from making their own firearms laws. And this is fairly common in states now. Mm-hmm. The city of Harrisburg was arguing that the plaintiffs didn't have standing because they had not been arrested or charged with violating any of the ordinances.
No, you know, we think of standing around here. Standing is an excuse for ducking a case that you should be solving and finding a way to dismiss without actually dismissing. Standing is a bogus right. concept.
Well,
yeah,
and the other big problem with requiring that kind of action in order to get standing in a case like this is, mm-hmm. if there's an ordinance where there might be some dispute over whether it's constitutional or not, you are making someone risk their freedom and livelihood yeah. by being arrested and charged with a crime in the hopes that the courts are going to find in their favor. And that's a dangerous precedent to start yeah. setting. So yeah. This was a really, really good decision out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, saying that no, if you're going to challenge a law on constitutional grounds, you do not have to wait until you are charged with violating an ordinance before you can bring suit. So,
yeah, that's a great principle. I just find it fascinating that it was a 4-3 decision. So three people thought that it was necessary before you could invoke your constitutional rights to have some huge demonstrated injury to get standing. So in other words, the court doesn't approve of the Constitution being violated until it meets a certain standard.
Yeah.
That's leftism. That's Marxism for you. Yeah. All right, sir. Wow. Contact information and then let's unless you have another thing for me.
Nope. As always, it's great talking with you. Jim
yeah, you
Dykes,
too.
I'm
Thank
director
you.
At Florida Carry. You can find us at www.floridacarry.org, and you can reach me directly at jim@floridacarry.org on email. So thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Always a good time when we get to hash this stuff over. And if you missed his information, I mean, this podcast will be available, and you can catch it then. All right, let me play you something here. We're open after this for anybody that wants to call about anything at all. I'll check with Buff and Jack on the live chat and anybody else that wants to do that. Gene, if you have a story, you know, that you want to talk about, feel free. And we'll just see who's there. 215-383-3822 is the call-in number. 215-383-382. Be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley. our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Okay, that's enough. We've got about 13 minutes left if you want to call us here, 215-383-3832. Gene, what a hell of a week, huh? We have accomplished some major ground in terms of, you know, we have Belize now, we have our Skype line working, we have these all these different issues that we've covered, all the different reports. We have medical. We have two medical freedom reports now. This show is growing, advancing, changing, and I think we're doing our best to be responsive to the issues and challenges where we can actually have some impact and effect.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Sure.
I think just having the medical people on for what's going on right now, it's good because that way it can keep people afloat of what is going on or especially in ways that they may not be aware of. And hopefully hopefully more states, more governors will be like Governor DeSantis and not allow people to be dictated to as to whether or not they need to get the vaccine, which I think is very sad. But I want to, did you hear, and I don't know when this letter came out from the NIH, when they said that they did pay for gain of functioning?
Well, there's something that came out, I guess, the other day that the Alex Andrzejewski, I'm probably not pronouncing it right, the head of Open Books, Open the Books, who is like the budget watchdog group for the government, was saying, yeah, there was some new memo that came out that they've been funding gain of function. They've been funding all kinds of things. I forgot it. No, something specific. No, I know what they said. They said that Dr. Fascist, the genocidal psychopathic vaccine drug pusher, the highest paid government employee, one of the reasons he's the highest paid is that he had a special enhancement put on his paycheck where he's responsible for bioweapons, you know, watching. And his job is to prevent a pandemic, which caused me to laugh hysterically, because not only did he fail to prevent one, I'm sure he had a major hand in causing it.
Exactly.
You know, for his own personal gain. Yeah. Yeah. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Kind of thing, my thinking is you talk about keep holding people accountable. They're still trying to hold Trump accountable for, I don't know what it is, collusion, whatever, January 6th, whatever they think of for the day to try to keep trying to find something to charge him with. You know, the January 6th people are still in jail. Why isn't Fauci in jail? You know, why isn't he charged for lying? I mean, that's perjury.
Yeah.
Why does he get by with it? He sits there so smug. And what he did to Ron Paul, a couple months ago, when Ron Paul basically told him that he was paying for gain of function, and Fauci got really nasty and said, you know, basically that he's lying. And it's like, hello, he's not.
No, he didn't prove that he was lying. In fact, he didn't defend himself. He accused Rand Paul of saying he's lying. I mean, he said, you know, how dare you question me? You know, you're spreading lies.
Right.
You know, it's fascinating, but this is what a guilty person does. They don't defend themselves. They attack their accuser or investigator. You know, the difference between a guilty person and an innocent person is you ask an innocent person, you know, why did you shoplift that store? I didn't shoplift that store. What are you talking about? I didn't prove it. Take a look at my stuff. There's nothing here. All right. Get over it. Whereas the guilty person would say, how dare you accuse me of stealing? I've been an honorable person all my life. No one's ever questioned my integrity. And of course, they probably have, you know, 15 bags of, you know, highly expensive whatever widgets in their bag as they're walking away. You know, I mean, that's the difference. So character analysis is the big thing. And Fauci is, as far as I'm concerned, an absolute psychopath. He has no conscience whatsoever. You know, he doesn't care that 700,000 people have died and he's suppressed the information that could have saved him. He doesn't care. He doesn't care one bit. That's a sick man. Okay. He's also obsessively greedy because, you know, he's making tons of money off this. You know, now we had a story the other day, which I really appreciate you bringing up. Well, I didn't. Go ahead.
With the $9 million,
right.
I read a lot of other things or some other articles, and one said that the $9 million came from the vaccines. Now I don't know if that's true or not, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that what is he pushing, and what has he mm-hmm. been developing for years. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, see, but I didn't trust that particular source because I read some of their other articles.
But there's other people that said the same thing about the $9 million.
See, that's where we need to pursue that. I want to get a couple of confirming sources. That might be something for next week. But I saw a source that said, that same source that said the $9 million also said Colin Powell committed suicide with sleeping pills. Now, I don't know
right.
if that's, you know, why would they know that? Nobody else. So I'm usually suspicious when I have one source talking about something. You know, especially if it's not the National Enquirer, which actually is pretty accurate. It's kind of funny that some of the
it is. It's kind of weird how that works. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now we used to think they were the joke people, but they're actually very good. New York Post, you know, a tabloid. They keep calling New York Post a tabloid. Well, they broke the Hunter Biden story before anybody else. You know, so some of these sources, it really depends on the source. And if you have a trusted source, you know, go with it. But this new source, and then so not only do I look at the story and see if that's plausible, I look at their other stories. You know, are you guys, you know, whack jobs off the deep end, or are you reporting some pretty consistent stuff? There was another one that I got sent a story that said that Colin Powell was really killed by people who didn't get the vaccine. I think it was Slate had this article. Excuse me. And so Slate was saying that, yes, the anti-vaxxers are the real problem here, that, you know, if they'd only gotten vaccinated, Colin Powell wouldn't have died. And, of course, that's insane. That's irrational. You know, that's like saying if people don't put sunscreen on, then other people are going to get sunburned. Really?
Exactly.
You know, people forget this is an airborne. People think that the only way you get COVID is personal contact with somebody else. That's nonsense. This thing's in the air. Okay, everybody's been exposed to it. I mean, Pianchi pointed out there's some like 3 trillion viruses in the air at any particular time. You know, and you're going to say that, you know, you were too close to one person who tested positive, you know, on a bogus PCR test, and that's why you got COVID. You can't say that. Maybe you just took a breath. Maybe your immune system wasn't good. Maybe you had a little lower resistance. Maybe you got a little drunk the night before. You're slightly hungover, and your body's not at 100%. You know, and the virus goes, hey, victim. You know,
it
you
was
don't
exactly.
Know.
No, it's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is why you can't. This is why contract tracing for a virus makes no sense. I mean, the best contact tracing they do is for things that are really provable, like STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, especially, you know, back in the days, you know, when before penicillin, for things like syphilis and gonorrhea. You really want to track people. You really want to let people know, hey, you might have something bad. You might not know what it is, and we got to cure you. You know, and here's the cure. Take the penicillin. You know, so that in that respect, public health is doing a good job because there are people that because that's not something their previous partners might have told them. You know, and so that's different. That's what contact tracing is for. It's not for a virus that is in the air that everybody gets exposed to. That just doesn't make any sense. And the idea of blaming people, the whole idea of, well, you were at a super spreader event. Well, I mean, I used to do tours. You know, I was talking about Alan about this. Did you ever listen to Alan? I mean, I think he's a real kick. I just hope I let him talk enough because I tend to monopolize. What do you think of our booze contact?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. He's cool. But anyway, both Alan and I, you know, met people from around the world. He was doing it for 18 years. I did it for 8. But I met people from all over the world. In San Francisco, there, it was before, you know, 2008 things slowed down. But there was a time, you know, both before and after 2008 when I was tour guiding. And literally I'd have on board my bus, you know, Saudi Arabians and Thais and New Zealanders and Argentinians and Germans and Vietnamese and, you know, Ecuadorians. I mean, they're all on the same bus, you know. And you have all these different people from around the world. And so I was exposed to literally everything. I think that's one of the reasons I have a really good immune system, because I've been exposed to people from all over the world. I didn't have any particular vaccines or stuff like that. And, of course, I'm up shaking their hands and, you know, taking tip money from them. And I'm getting, you know, it's real up and close exposure. I didn't care. I was fine. Why? I don't think I ever got sick the whole time I was tour guiding. Why? Because I built up a really strong immune system. You know, so that's how you do it. So the immune system, like anything else, needs exercise. You got to test it. You got to go out in the world. You got to breathe deep. And your immune system is designed to handle it until you reach that point in life when, you know, you're at the shorter end of the journey and your immune system won't handle it. And that's what's going to happen to all of us. But in the meantime, you got a really good immune system. So go have fun. Go to Belize. Go take a tour. You know, go sailfish fishing or whatever you want to do. You know, enjoy yourselves. But this idea, this panic and this fear, I think the fear reduced immune systems more than anything else. People are so scared that the anxiety destroyed their immune systems. Have you ever read an article on that, or you know, is it not as strong an effect as I think, or you think that might be something for us to look up? Fear induced lower immune response. What do you think?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, because what happens when you're going through something stressful, your immune system is lower. So that makes sense, that what you just said. Yeah. I mean, that's why people that are under more stress are more vulnerable to get sick, because they don't have a good immune system. Why? Because the stress is horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I always used to get pop the microphones. I always used to get like a vicious cold, you know, during final exams in college. Why? Because I was staying awake studying. It was stressful. It was the end of the year. I was exhausted, you know, and so I'd usually end up with a cold and I'd go home sick. Yeah, and but that to me was stress induced illness. And I'm wondering on a large scale, you know, you sort of wonder with Dr. Fascist being as sick as he is, sick mentally. No, not physically, but sick mentally, that if he didn't somehow either enjoy or engineer the fear that he was producing, knowing that it was going to lower people's immune systems and cause him to, you know, make more money off his vaccine royalties. I mean, I can't prove it. I don't know. I'm just speculating here. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if that happened and he didn't care, because he certainly did nothing to remove the fear. In fact, he lives off fear. You know, it's like that Star Trek episode where famous lawyer in San Francisco, his defense attorney, and he played this really nasty creature on Star Trek and fed off emotions, and they created fear in all the crew with mental illusions that their worst fears came out. And it was Nestle Bailey. That was another lawyer, but I'll think of him. Great lawyer. Montgomery Street office was famous in San Francisco, the king of torts. Anyway, so he was on Star Trek episode, and they bred on fear. And that was their fuel. That was their energy. Fear was actually, they lived off emotions. You know, it's a weird Star Trek plot, but this guy, I don't think he cares how much fear he generates. In fact, I think he uses fear to sell his product. Got about a minute.
Well, definitely. Yeah. And he's so incompetent. And I guess that's why Biden keeps him around too. I mean, Trump kept him around. Trump should have got rid of him. I don't know why he didn't, but should have been retired. I just think he should have been gone long ago, not even retired because of all the ineptness he is. But that's the problem with government, especially as we're seeing in the Biden, whatever you want to call it. He can't get anybody more incompetent. At least I can't see it. And then someone else comes up for a hearing to get confirmed, and you're just like, oh, my God, another
idiot. The one they wanted to have for Customs and Border Protection didn't know any of the laws, didn't know anything. We just had Merrick Garland. Thank God he didn't get on the Supreme Court. But he was up there trying to defend his memo, you know, calling parents terrorists for asking questions at school board meetings. I mean, these people are legendary, you know, they're legendary incompetents and dangerous and political operatives. You know, that's what happens when you let people steal your election. So to get back to your original question of why all this happened, it really all comes down to the geldings letting the Marxists steal the election. That's where all our problems come from today. If they had not done that, we wouldn't have anywhere near. We'd be basically, you know, business as usual under the Trump administration, hopefully recovering from, you know, his COVID ignorance and influence. Anyway, that's it for this week. We have to go. Back Monday morning, 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, who knows in Hawaii. And in Belize, they don't get a daylight saving time, so they're an hour behind us too. This has been a great show. June, thanks for – go ahead.
Yeah, I just say take care.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for a great week and everybody that called in, and we'll do it again next week with more adventures in Action Radio. Greg Fenglis here, and the website is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. I'll see you all Monday morning.